Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. We know it's been a while, but I promise you today's episode is going to be worth the wait. We just got off the line with Rob Cesternino. Let's go through this really quickly. Towards the end of the month of June, we're going to be talking to Stephen Fishback, doing a retrospective on his game in Token Jeans. Very excited about that. For those of you who listened last time we covered this show, we're going to do some coverage again of Flipped Off. Season one just ended. I highly recommend everyone who didn't watch it go back and watch it. It is some of the greatest television ever made. Matt Rodriguez is going to come back and join us for that, and we're going to be doing a top 10 countdown of all the best moments from season one. And then we're actually going to be covering some other shows. Dom, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, Big Brother comes back in mid-July, so we're going to be talking about that. Probably do a preview show and then do a show for every week that's on. Also, Breaking Bad comes back in mid-July, and we're both very excited about that. We can't talk about that as we talk about a show like Big Brother or Survivor for obvious reasons, but we definitely want to discuss it at some point, so we're going to find a way to work that in as well.
Yeah, and actually, just kind of breaking news stuff, I've been exchanging a couple messages with Jeff Pittman, the founder of True Dark Times, and it's looking like we're going to be able to get him in here at some point. And I'm excited to get to talk about hopefully some of the earlier seasons of Survivor, because I think that's some of the stuff we really haven't touched on too much yet. But speaking of earlier seasons of Survivor, we got Rob Cesternino coming on right now, so stay tuned, and that's coming up next. All right, so here we are, and Dominic, I am very excited because we are joined today by a very special guest. You know him from Survivor Amazon, Survivor All-Stars, and his own show. Ladies and gentlemen, coming to us live from his apartment, here's the guy who makes spending $7 on a bell worth every penny, Rob Cesternino!
Seven. You guys got ripped off. You paid $7 for a bell.
Where are you buying your bells? It was Staples, $7.
I buy them all on Amazon.com.
Oh, as should all of our listeners through your little link site.
Yeah, well, if you want to go to robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, that helps support the podcast. I didn't expect to be doing a
Well, hey, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of discussion. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of talk about your own podcast on here. We're very interested in all that. And just so everyone knows at home, this is yet another Dom and Colin retrospective. We're going to be going through Rob's game in the Amazon, which took place back in 2003, going all the way back to the days of Rob Asu. Dom, so if you're ready to get started, let me know, and we should be good.
Wait, I thought we were going to talk about Survivor All-Stars.
Well, we can do that.
I only have like 10 minutes to talk.
All right. So, yeah, Rob, if you're unfamiliar with how we do this, basically the way we like to go through this is chronologically, basically. And with someone like you, I think you're kind of tailor-made for our kind of show where when on Survivor, you were truly like the, if not, probably one of the first really thinking players about all the different angles. And that's what we really like to get into. You see a lot of not interviews, but just Survivor analysis and everything being very oriented on the result, like results-oriented, as we say. And we're very much more interested in the process, and I think you are a spectacular person to have on to come and describe the process for us.
Yeah, well, I've heard nothing but good things about what you guys are doing and the very serious and strategic approach that you're taking through, sorting all of this stuff out. So I've been looking forward to this. So wherever you want to go.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have a chance to talk to you in particular because you're probably the person who the Survivor fan community is most familiar with on a kind of day-to-day basis. But usually on your show, the focus is with the guests that you have for that week or the events that are happening on the show. So we never get a chance to talk about you specifically. So it's nice to have a chance to just have a conversation that's focused on you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll be kind of fun. I mean, I think that I'm a little bit of a different sort of person than the traditional person that goes on these reality shows. Because I think that, 97, 98% of the people who go on reality shows are extroverts. And in that they, if they go to a party, these are the people that are like dancing on the tables and their whole thought process is, oh my God, hey everybody, look what I'm doing. And I think I'm a little bit of a different sort of, animal of reality show contestant in that I think my whole sort of, thinking is, hey, look what they're doing. And so it's, I don't really look at the focus of, making it about me. I mean, even from when I was on the show, I am observing what's happening with these other players and talking about what they're doing as opposed to, the kind of person that's talking about what I'm doing.
Right. And you're not the sort of character like someone like Philip or Tarzan where they're just completely lacking self-awareness and that's what makes them funny. Like, your kind of brand of humor, your way of talking to the cameras clearly displaying a level of self-awareness that maybe a lot of other people in the game weren't displaying typically.
Well, I, you know, I'm probably self-aware to a fault, but yeah, thank you, Dom.
Well, one of those things, you know, you played back in 2003, like I said, and this was at the point where there had only been five seasons before yours, and most of the younger guys that we'd seen have success on Survivor were like the alpha male muscular hero types, and take this in the spirit in which it's intended, but like the, you know, like the Colby and Ethan types, not necessarily them being alpha males, but like, you know, the strong guys who are going to play like a really physical and straightforward game. And the real strategic masterminds had been like Richard Hatch, like Lex and Brian Heideck, like the older guys. And you were really, I think, that first combination of the younger guy who was also really there to win, instead of try to just beat the challenges and play honorably. And this is obviously before you, there was no predecessor to what we now refer to as like the Rob C type when we talk about like Todd or Stephen Fishback. So one of the questions we had, and we like to start even before the game starts with these retrospectives, is the casting process. How did you crack that interview process, get it becoming like that first type to get actually to make it to the show?
Well, I came at Survivor in a little bit of a different way than I think anybody else had come before that, in that I loved Survivor from, you know, the time that I first saw it. I think the first episode I saw might have been the fourth episode of the first season, and I really, you know, just fell in love with the show. My friend Floyd, I was a senior. It was the summer of going, you know, I did 4.5 years at Oswego State University in upstate New York, and I had one summer in particular between my senior year and that last semester that I was there at Oswego, where it was the summer of 2000, and Survivor had, you know, came on the air, and my friend Floyd and I, who I lived with, we just fell in love with the show. We would have tribal councils in our living room at, you know, it'd be like late at night. We were like voting people out of our house. We just loved Survivor. We talked about it all the time. We watched Big Brother that summer, and Big Brother we got a little bored with because it wasn't the same way that it's done now. But I ended up, you know, saying I'm going to be on one of these shows, and I said that this is what I'm going to do. So Survivor kept going, and I was like, man, this Survivor looks very hard. Like, I'm looking at, you know, Australia, and they have no food, and then I watch Africa, and they have no water. I'm like, I don't think I would make it on Survivor. But, you know, Big Brother changed its format, and they sort of had a Big Brother 2, and I really loved, and my biggest inspiration was Dr. Will Kirby on Big Brother 2, and I said, wow, this is so much fun. Look what you could be doing. And so I said, I'm going to be on Big Brother because that's much more like what I do in college. I sit around and talk around the house, and I don't have to, you know, get bitten by bugs or sit outside. And so I applied to be on Big Brother. So I went through I sent in a tape to be on Big Brother, and it was a sort of a silly tape. It was about me being interviewed with Julie Chen. Do you remember, you ever see on the old Conan O'Brien where he used to have like Bill Clinton and the mouse would move?
Yeah,
picture?
I do. Yeah, yeah.
So that was sort of like what I did with Julie Chen, and I sort of, like, Julie Chen was talking to me the morning after I had allegedly won Big Brother 3, and I was talking about how that, you know, I had this strategy, and what I did was I had, you know, there was all this sexual tension with all of the women in the house, and Julie Chen was sort of calling me out that didn't really happen. So, like, I was, you know, making fun of myself in the video, and I got a phone call from a casting person that was like, hey, so we got your tape. And I thought it was like a friend of mine messing with me. And he said, no, I'm not messing with you. And I went to the interview in New York, and they liked me, and they brought me out to go to LA. And I went to the finals of Big Brother casting for Big Brother 3. And I really thought I was going to be on Big Brother 3. I really did. And then at the last week in June, in 2002, I got a call from the casting, the woman who did the casting, and she said, yeah, you know, they really liked you, but we're going to go with somebody else. But, you know, we'll think, Josh Feinberg was the guy that they took instead of me, and he was also from Long Island. And, you know, I think he looked a little bit like me, but I don't think he was very similar to me as a player. But he was also kind of like a funny guy. And so he went into the Big Brother house, and he was like, you know, created a lot of, he was crying, you know, he's very emotional in the Big Brother house. And so, you know, I thought that was it. And I said, okay, well, you know, I'll try out for Big Brother 4. So cut to September of 2002, I get a phone call one day, and the lady on the phone said, "Hey, Rob, do you remember me from casting or whatever on CBS?" I'm like, "Okay." She said, "Do you want to be on Survivor?" And I was like, "Okay, yeah, right. Like, I'm going to be on Survivor." And she said, "Well, we want to fly you back to LA to meet with production and casting." And I said, "Okay, well, as a Survivor fan, I said, oh, this is too cool. I never at any point thought I was actually going to be on Survivor. I said, I'm going to get out there. They're going to look at me and say, no, you're not right for this. And at the worst case scenario was I was more in their heads for Big Brother 4. So I went out to LA and had really no expectations whatsoever that I was going to be on Survivor. And frankly, when, you know, I found out that I was going to be on Survivor, it was quite a shock to me because I was not, I was like, wait, no, I really have to go? Like, I thought I was just playing around here. So I was a little reluctant to even go on. I mean, I wasn't going to say no, but I was like, I had a few sleepless nights, getting ready to go out there. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this is crazy. I'm going to go out there and live with no food in the jungle with bugs. Like, what am I thinking?
Yeah, definitely. Now, in terms of preparing for that actual game, before we get to being out on the island itself or out in the Amazon itself, what kind of, because like I mentioned, there hadn't really been anyone that would play your kind of style before. So what kind of preparation did you do really planning for the game?
Well, I did a lot getting ready to go play in the game. I think I read a few books. I mean, I only had like 4 weeks to go. So I tried to read, there's like a Survivor handbook, but that, I don't remember anything that was really in there. I read something that one of the websites at the time, maybe it was like Reality News Online, had a thing in the sidebar that was like a Machiavellian book. And I remember reading that before I went on Survivor the first time. And it was like the ad said something like, oh, use the same sort of strategies as Richard Hatch. So I read something like that. But I don't think I read too many things that really influenced how I would play in the game. It was really a lot out of what I had watched on the show. Or not even so much on Survivor. I think a lot of my strategy was influenced by the two seasons of Big Brother that I had seen prior to going out there, and specifically the game that Dr. Will played in Big Brother 2 and the game that Danielle Reyes played alongside Jason in Big Brother 3.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually just about to bring that up. You know, we saw you, and we'll get into this, doing quite a bit of flip-flopping, which is quite standard in Big Brother when the power changes week to week. But in Survivor, that had really never been done. Had you, and we'll get certainly into more detail about them as we get there, but did you plan at all on this kind of, well, I'll kind of take it vote by vote, or were you dead set, since it was Survivor and alliances were the way to go, that might be your standard game plan there?
Yeah, there was no master plan going in, but I really was very impressed with in Survivor Marquesas when they flipped on the row 2-4. That was very, like, wow, that was so awesome. That was so cool that they did that. And I remember even thinking, like, in Survivor Australia, I remember, like, looking at how, like, the things had broken down and, like, saying, I'm trying to remember what I was very convinced at the time. I was like, oh, you see, Amber should switch to the Kuchit tribe, and then she'll be assured a spot in the final four if she goes with them. And it was like, well, why didn't she do that? So I think that switching was always very much on my mind as a viewer, and I never really understood, and I still really don't, why people don't put their own self-interests ahead of the group dynamic more, especially after the merge.
That was actually another question I had for you down the line, but this is absolutely something I want to get into, which is, you know, people who have seen your season now, there have been 24 seasons, they've seen you, they've seen Sari, they've seen other people, Johnny Fairplay, who flip a bunch, and they've seen it work many, many times. Why do you think it is that we get so many pedongings now in just modern Survivor?
Well, I think that there's a few factors there. I think that there are a lot of people that just don't know how to play the game that are on the show. I mean, I think that if people had a really clear picture of what was going on, they would switch more, especially when it gets down to 7 and down to 5. I think the final three plays a factor because when the final two was the way that the game ended, you had more people saying like, well, I don't think I'm in the final three. But because you have like a final three now, Kim could be telling everybody, hey, you're in the final three with me. You're in the final three with me. And even if they say, well, I think she really likes Chelsea better than me, but I'm probably the third person also with Kim and Chelsea. So I think that plays a factor. And I also think that people, you know, there are people who are out there who are just like, well, I don't want to get kicked off the show. I want to be on TV every week. I don't want to get kicked off the show. So I think that people aren't trying to win as much as they are trying to stay on television sometimes. So it's like, I'm not going to make a move. I'll go out seventh when I could go out fourth. Even if I don't win the game, I'm going to be famous after this. So I don't want to lose out on being famous. Like I'll make $1 million after this.
Yeah, the way that Colin phrased, and maybe this wasn't the intention, it made it seem like Pagoing's anomaly that we wouldn't expect to see in a random season. It might have been said that they are kind of like the natural result of Survivor, and that we're just being spoiled by having some seasons where that hasn't happened, particularly all-star seasons like, you know, fans versus favorites, heroes versus villains, where things were being shaken up constantly.
I think the common denominator on both of those seasons is that you had people there who knew how to play the game. And I think that's why I'm very much in favor of All-Star seasons. And people say, when I say I'm very much in favor of All-Star seasons, they say, oh, why? Because you want to go back? I say, no. Please, leave me home. I'll podcast about it. But I want to watch people who know how to play the game play the game. I mean, even on Heroes vs. Villains, I think you had a good season because you had probably 15 out of 20 people there who knew how to play the game.
Right. They don't even have to be good. All you need is a critical mass of people actually are trying to play the game so that you don't have situations where you have someone like Boss and Rob or Kim play against a bunch of people who really just aren't interested in ever doing anything to oppose them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
All right. So I think if you're ready to get into it, let's go into your game itself. How's that sound?
Go for it.
All right, and now this is kind of a fun little start, but this is something that I take I weighed very heavily when ranking Survivor players, and that is the choice of luxury item. And we saw you now bring the Magic 8 Ball. What kind of thought went into that?
Well, the way that that works is that you give them a list of things to bring as your luxury item, and I said, okay, well, I want to bring some. You know, I'm going to be a fun guy on the show. I want to have something that's going to be, you know, fun to have around. So I said, okay, I think I had like, I had the Magic 8 Ball on my list. I had the bell as on the list. And, I think they thought that probably would have wreaked havoc with sound issues. Just have a bell randomly going off, here and there. I think I had maybe an Etch-a-Sketch on the list. So it was just all like, you know, stupid things, like that. I think I might have had a pad and a pen, so I felt like, okay, I could write stuff down to say if I had that. But maybe that, and then they picked it out of the list. They said, oh, Magic 8 Ball, that's so funny. And I said, well, this will be good because then if I'm ever in a tight spot and I don't know, which path do I go, I'll just have the Magic 8 Ball and that'll be the tiebreaker for me.
It would be like that episode of Community with all the different timelines where your vote it opens up several different timelines and different winners.
That would be perfect. I hope that I didn't end up ever in the most in
the darkest
evil
timeline.
The darkest timeline yet.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I like that. I like using the luxury item to your advantage. I like that, solidifying that that kind of goofy guy role. So what was it like, you know, now that day one and the way your season started, for those people who don't remember, is you guys each went out on boats and then got into a larger boat, and Jeff broke you up men versus women. And what was it like actually knowing you were just finally about to start playing Survivor?
See, the thing that was in my head that they weren't going to do men versus women was on Survivor Thailand, they sort of had the people in boats, and it's like, you know, the two seasons that come one after each other, in a season of Survivor. So it's like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, they're filmed like back to back. So
sure.
I had seen the beginning of Survivor Thailand, and Survivor Thailand sort of opens with, I think that, like, I think they brought them out where the men were on one boat and the women were on another boat, and it was like, oh, are they gonna do this men versus women? And I had a friend of mine, and I said to him, like, do you think they'll ever do a men versus women season? He's like, no, they'll never do it. They want to have sex on the island or whatever. They'll never do that. So it was a little bit of a blindside to me personally when it was men versus women. But I felt good about the idea of men versus women. Even though I felt like I would get along well with the women, I felt like, okay, good. Because my biggest fear going in was they're going to vote me out because I'm not strong enough in the challenges. And I said, okay, men versus women, suddenly we have a lot of muscle guys. I don't think we're going to need me not performing up to snuff in the challenge isn't going to be why we lose the immunity challenge. We have enough muscle guys. Well, so I felt better about that.
Well, you have a lot of muscle guys, and you also have Daniel Liu and Ryan Aiken.
I counted them in the muscle guys.
Not to bag on them too much. I'm sure they're perfectly nice people, but come on now, you know.
Well,
if they were strong, if there was like a bench press competition, I'm sure both of them would have done very well.
Let's talk about the guys on your starting tribe. What did you think about them? Just first impressions.
Well, the guy that I really liked the most out of the group right off the bat was Alex. I mean, I felt like he was, you know, very conversational. I really, really liked Alex. Butch was, you know, is just a super nice guy. He was, you know, very friendly off the bat. Roger was, you know, he was kind to me from the get-go. You know, he didn't really have an issue with me. Matthew was always, it was like a little, you know, he wasn't like overly friendly. He was a little more reclusive. And then the guy who probably talked the most was Ryan. And he just was like, oh my God, bro, blah, 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 you know, for just like shot out of the cannon to start off the game.
Sure, yeah. Dave, any thoughts?
I mean, Dave was, you know, I didn't really have any strong take on Dave when we first got started. Actually, you know, I take that back. I saw Dave in casting when I was there. Like, they brought me in. Like, they had already – everybody else had gone through casting before I got there. So I was sort of like – at the last minute, they were making some tweaks. So it was just me and, like, you know, 10 to 12 other guys that they were trying to, add to the cast. And Dave was in that group. So Dave was sort of like at least a friendly face of somebody that I had met, seen at CBS during the casting. So when I saw him at the airport, like nodding at Dave. So, that was the only other face I had recognized, throughout all that. So, I mean, Dave was a nice enough guy, to get started. So I really didn't have any sort of strong opinion about Dave. But Ryan, it was definitely very polarizing to start.
Sure. So, you know, when you guys ended up losing that first immunity challenge, was it more than just the balance beam and everything that got Ryan the axe?
Well, Roger had it out for Ryan from the get-go. Ryan was Ryan from all the way from, you know, he couldn't not be Ryan the whole time through. And what I mean by that is, so we went through like the Ponderosa, like there's a long period of time where you're not allowed to talk and everything like that. And so, we were all in like these, like we stayed in sort of like a this weird sort of jungle treehouse where we slept in hammocks and stuff before the game started, but you weren't allowed to talk to anybody. But so you had to climb up there's like central stairs up the middle of the treehouse. And then we were all on different floors or whatever. Like there was like three or four of us on each floor. So I guess Ryan must have been very high up in the treehouse and the food didn't agree with him. So I guess apparently what I've heard was that Roger was trying to sleep and every night Ryan would stomp up and down the stairs very loudly and it really annoyed Roger. And that was like he really had an axe to grind with him once the bell rang in the game. So, yeah. So Roger just did not like Ryan whatsoever. And Roger really he was the first person that really like the game really started with Roger because he got, you know, he had Butch. He took a liking to Dave. He took a liking to Alex. And I was sort of, you know, a little nervous the first couple days. But Roger took me aside and said, hey, we're going to be in an alliance. And I was like, okay, great. That sounds perfect. So Roger came and picked me up and said, hey, you're in the alliance.
You were saying yes to more than one alliance early on there.
Well, then at the same time, you know, Ryan is sort of trying to mount his counter alliance. And I honestly don't remember who the target of his alliance is. I don't remember who Ryan and,
I think it was Roger.
They vote for Roger. Yeah. Okay. So Ryan comes to me, and this is back when there used to be 8 people on a tribe. And so, he comes back and says, hey man, we're voting out Roger, and, do we have you? I'm like, and I think the right answer on Survivor is anytime anybody asks you, it's like in Ghostbusters when, anybody asks you if you're a god, you say, yes. The right answer, are you with us, is always yes. And I felt like, especially pre-merge, I didn't have an issue with telling Ryan I was with him because I figured that he's going home anyway. So it didn't really matter if he was mad.
Yeah, what was with Dave's vote for Dan Liu? Was this some master political move on Dave's part, or was this just him having no idea what was going on?
So I guess, and I don't really know how this came up, but somehow Dave Johnson knew Ryan, like they had like a mutual friend or something. Like, I don't know how they, like, I don't think they knew each other ahead of time, but they talked and they realized that they had some connection, like, outside of the game. And Dave was like, look, I gave him my word that I can't vote. I'm not going to vote for him. So I'm voting for Daniel. And Dave Johnson hated Daniel Liu. I don't really exactly know why. Dave Johnson hated Dan Liu so much. And I don't know what exactly Daniel did. I actually misspoke one time where I was off with Dave and we were doing something and I accidentally called Dave Dan and he got so mad. He was like, don't ever say that again. Don't ever call me Daniel. I was like, all right, I'm sorry. Sorry, it's a very similar name, Dan and Dave. But yeah, Dave Johnson did not care for Daniel Liu.
Don't call me Dan, Roger.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
So Dave was content with knowing that Ryan would be voted out. So he was with the older guys and you at that point.
Yeah, he was with, it wasn't like he was like a, going rogue or anything like that. And he cleared that with Roger and everything. Everybody seems pretty content with that. Dave wasn't going to vote with them. So then, Mateo and Daniel at that point, I felt really good at that point. I'm like, I'm in the big alliance. And then these two guys voted the wrong way. So we're going to get rid of them too before anybody talks about getting rid of me. And by that time, it'll probably be a switch or a merge. So I felt very good after that first night.
Sure. But I think it was episode 2 where we see you kind of launch this begin to launch a campaign against Roger. Was that accurate? Like when it happened? Or is that just to fill what happens at guys camp when they don't win or when they don't get a tribal council?
I thought about it. I was like, I felt like I was so far down on the totem pole. Like, I'm like, well, I'm 5th out of this group of 5 with Alex and Dave and Butch and Roger. And I felt, I felt like, well, where's this going? Like, if I don't do something now, I'm going to be, going out. Like, I'm going to be the first one out of this alliance when we get to the, the final 6 or whatever, if we got that far. I know it's thinking very far ahead. And I said, I like Daniel Liu. And I said, okay, well, what about, Daniel Liu and Matthew just sitting there, their votes are just out there. I said, what if I got Alex? And now there's, I guess 7 people. So me, Alex, Daniel Liu, and Matthew, and now all of a sudden we vote out Roger, and now away we go. And I sort of, I said, this could be a good power move early, sort of get in a good position. And I sort of talked about it with Alex, and Alex and I had gotten close very early in the game. And so I talked about it, and then Matthew, as much, Dave really didn't like Daniel, and Alex didn't like Matthew. And I don't think Alex was super fond of Daniel either. Like, both of those guys couldn't not annoy other people from the tribe. I think I felt like I could have gotten along with anybody, but I feel like Alex was very much anti-Matthew throughout the whole game. And then it just wasn't gonna, like, it would have been a lot to pull off early in the game, and we would have used a lot of political capital, I guess, to sort of make such a big move so early.
Well, today I learned that Daniel Liu is in Dave Ball and Jonathan Penner territory for mandatory last name.
Yeah,
I had no idea. You guys win the second episode of Immunity, and it's all good for there. And actually, the next thing I want to ask about is this reward challenge, which you actually got to play again in All-Stars. For people at home who don't remember, everyone gets a little box of items, and you try to make pairs with people from your own team or the other team in the style of, like, Go Fish. And you guys ultimately end up losing this challenge, but I think more you feel like winners because you for the first time get to interact with the girls. What did you think of the girls, and what did you know, if anything, about their camp?
Well, we didn't know anything about their camp, but that was really one of the most fun times of all of Survivor of the Amazon. I mean, it really was like the eighth grade dance where it was like up until that point, the men were on one side, the women were on the other side. And then I felt really good about the game because the women seemed to like me and to enjoy my company, and they weren't like they seemed very friendly. And so I was very excited, and they were, you know, it was flirtatious, and it was fun, and it was a fun game, and it was like, okay, we didn't win the bath stuff, but it was like, what were we going to do with it anyway? Could you imagine, you know, Butch with a loofah? I mean, what were we going to do? So it was just, you know, it was so much fun to, you know, play that game with the girls, and, you know, there were definitely some fun moments that came out of that episode.
Yeah, definitely. Most notably, probably, for the purposes of this podcast, your very well-documented crush on Heidi, which I imagine now Cole Hamels is giving her plenty of help with her bosom.
I feel like I made Heidi Hamels. I really do feel like I need some sort of a commission. I think I put her over, to use a wrestling term. Now, you know, nobody was talking about Heidi Strobel before this guy came along, and I hyped her up. And then, lo and behold, you know, Lefty Hamels comes along, and, you know, like $150 million later, Heidi is the true winner of Survivor of the Amazon. But I think I should get a little bit of credit here.
Yeah, I'll just take like 15%.
Yeah, what proportion of Cole Hamels' net worth are you entitled to, do you think?
I think, how about 0.5%? How's that?
I'll take it, yeah. Alright, I don't want to get out of hand with this bell. I told myself I wouldn't.
Yeah. Alright. I'll stop for a quarter.
Okay. So, you know, the next immunity challenge you guys lose, this is where we do see Dan Liu end up going. How did that end up going down?
Well, it was a pretty cut and dry decision that Daniel Liu was going to go. I mean, everybody sort of knew. And he also got into it with Roger, and that sort of sealed his fate. The only thing that I didn't like how it went down here was it sort of got... Daniel said at the tribal council, and I don't know if he still feels this way, but he said at the tribal council that he felt like it was a racial sort of thing, and that's why he was targeted. But I don't think it had anything to do with anything like that. I mean, who knows inside, you know, Roger's head or, you know, one of these other guys, but I don't think it was the case. If Daniel Liu was, you know, the same exact guy. I think he's still fell off the balance beam and still voted against Roger at the first tribal council. I think the outcome would have been exactly the same. I don't think there was any sort of racism at play there.
I'm not sure there's a long history of systematic discrimination against Daniel Liu's in American society.
I don't know. I don't think so. I love Daniel Liu.
Yeah, sure. As do we. Not to even get into the challenge itself too much, but you guys then have a fishing challenge, and I thought it was a string of pretty cool and kind of like old school now Survivor challenges. And just to step briefly away from your own game, what do you think of how the challenges have evolved over on Survivor over time?
I don't get too caught up about the challenges. I know that's like a common complaint of people that, the challenges suck nowadays. But, I mean, I didn't watch Survivor for the challenges in the beginning, and that's not why I've continued to be fascinated with this show, you know, 24 seasons later. I mean, I'm there for the strategic game. I mean, for my money... I would say, get the two tribes together. Let's flip a coin, and whoever loses go to tribal council. Let's get back to camp and see what's really going on. So I don't have a huge complaint with the challenges. I mean, there was still – I think it's sort of like You know, it's this way about Saturday Night Live where everybody always says Saturday Night Live sucks and it was better, you know, when they were, you know, 5 years ago, but 5 years ago everybody said it sucked then. I bet there were still some clunkers on Survivor. I mean, if you go through the Amazon, there's a couple of challenges that are not that impressive. So I think it's, you know, they still have some good ones. They had some good ones last season. So I think that's overstated. The challenges suck now.
Yeah, I don't know that it's so much that all the challenges suck. It's just, I think, at least for me, they've kind of taken a turn. You know, in the older seasons, we'd get a couple, you know, two or three challenges a season that was kind of related to, like, indigenous weaponry or whatever. And I thought those were cool. Well, you know, everyone gets one shot with a boomerang instead of just, you know, models and actors doing three-hour obstacle courses.
Yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, you guys, you win the fishing challenge anyway, so again, no tribal council. And the next thing to really get on here, obviously, is going to be the twist where you guys break down into new tribes, and you end up getting shipped over to the Jabiru camp, and your new team is now going to be Jenna, Alex, Dina, Shauna, and Matthew. Yeah. So let's get into that. What did you think of the new team here?
I mean, that was really when the game really shifted for me. I mean, days 1 through 12 was really nothing spectacular. Like, I did during that time was, you know, not get voted out. I was sort of just there. Now, out of Roger's shadow, now I was able to play the game. I mean, there was really, like, I was just really biding time days 1 through 12. And it's really, you know, if you look at the second time I played, I basically had played the same exact game, days 1 through 12 both times, just had very different results. So I really just was, you know, sitting around waiting for my chance to make a move. Now I'm on a new tribe. There's no set leader. Everybody's sort of on equal footing. It's almost like I can work and have a relationship with everybody there. And now the game totally is, you know, a different game for me.
Well, to ask about one person in particular, we see later that your relationship with Matt is something which ends up affecting the course of the game. And now this is the first time where, you know, you've been with him since day one, but now you're in a kind of totally new situation. Did your relationship with Matt change at this point at all?
It's a good question. My relationship with Matt changes a lot over the course of the game. Now, through days 1 through 12, I feel, especially now after Daniel Liu goes home on day 9, now the next 3 days, I feel very much in competition with Mateo because I'm saying, well, the next time we lose and go to Tribal Council, are they going to vote off Matt or are they going to vote me out? Because I'm like, well, I'm in the alliance with everybody else and Matt is not. But Matt has some use to the group. He's, like, trying to catch a fish. I don't know if he ever did catch. I think he caught, like, a small fish, and it just was not a fun position to be in. So I thought, this fish sucks. This isn't even a good fish, you know? So I found myself trying to, you know, make fun of Matt and try to, you know, diminish him as a person here because I'm in direct competition for him. If Matthew supersedes me in the group and cracks the 5 somehow, I'm going to be the next one to go home if we don't switch or if we lose the immunity challenge on day 12. So I was very nervous at that time going into the Piranha challenge. Then, admittedly, I was not thrilled to have Matthew with us on when we went over to Jabiru. I was very excited. I had Alex, who was my closest ally in the game. And then I hit it off instantly with all three of the girls there, with Dina, with Shauna, and with Jenna. And everything was great, but it was like we still had Matt. And I was like, well, what do we do with this guy? And really, Dina was sort of opened my eyes and said, like, well, like, he's going to kind of do whatever we want, and he's going to catch fish. Let's keep him around. I was like, yeah, okay, I like this. Let's just keep Matt around, bring him along.
Sure, let's talk about Dina a little bit, because Dina's obviously another, I think, historically very underrated player. She was certainly there to play, and of course, you two met up, and for the time being, at least, formed quite a nice bond there. You want to go into how that happened?
Yeah, that was exactly my strategy coming in, was I had seen how effective the relationship and the alliance that Danielle and Jason had on Big Brother 3 and what they've done, and which nobody has really ever done on Survivor since, was, hey, we're going to be an alliance and we're not going to tell everybody that we're an alliance. We are working together, the two of us, but everybody's not going to know we're working together. And so, and Dina had seen Big Brother 3 and she said, yes, that's great. I love that. So we hit it off, and okay, so Dina and I are working together, and she was very level-headed, and we both sort of bonded over, well, we're not the beautiful people out here. We're not the, you know, actors, models. We're the people who are fans of the show, and we both know how to play the game, and we're smart, and we're having a blast, being out here, and we're not, you know, 8% body fat. And so we really had hit it off. And she had a stupid luxury item, too. She had water balloons. So we had a lot in common, Dina and I.
So you guys win one of the immunity challenges, sorry, and then ultimately lose the second one. And this is where we see Shauna go. How did all that go down?
Well, it was kind of – it kind of sucked in a way. It was like, hey, we all like each other. This is great. There's nobody we want to vote out. So Shauna had wanted to quit the game, I think, on day 12, and they didn't let her. Like, she has, like, on the fourth episode, she's, like, crying. She wants to quit. And the Jenna and Heidi and the other girls, they vote out Joanna, and even though Shauna wanted to go home. So Shauna was, like, she kind of wanted to stay, but she wasn't, like, putting up a big fight about how to keep her around. But at the same time, she sort of has this showmance that develops with Alex, and they sort of like fall in love in a very short amount of time. So Alex is like, he's not really cool with voting out Shauna. Alex wants to vote out Matt. But my, what I wanted to do was, I said, well, let's vote. If we can vote out a one of the women, and especially Dina and Jenna were cool with it, I said, this is sort of like how the situation that Kim, and the girls from Survivor One World were in, where Troyzan and Jay were willing to vote out Jonas. And I said, well, if they're willing to vote out Shauna, let's do this. Let's vote out Shauna. We're keeping, Dina had said, rightly, let's keep Matt around. And then I was able to go into the merge and tell Roger and Butch and Dave, hey, we're still with you guys. We voted out the girl like we were supposed to. Just like the men had voted out Gene when they went to tribal council, 3 days earlier.
Yeah. How did you manage to get Jenna on board with this? Because it seemed like there's no reason for her to want to vote out someone like Shauna, who she's close to, over someone like Matt, who isn't like socially integrated into the tribe very much.
I can't, tell you why certain people had the motivations that they had. I can tell you that she wanted to. It's not that I know, and I'm not telling you. You make a good point. I don't know okay. Why Jenna and Dina wanted to vote out Shauna. I think they felt like she was wishy-washy, and they felt like, also I think that they felt like, well, now her and Alex are a couple, and we'll break that up also. And so they were, they were fine with not having Shauna. They just felt like, even though Shauna was a really nice person, she was just like not somebody that you could really count on in your alliance.
Sure. And now as a savvy Survivor viewer, you can count that there are 10 people left and probably anticipate that the merge is coming soon. And we do see you anticipate that. And this is one of the biggest moves and probably one of your most well-executed moves. Which is where you kind of gather your whole Jabiru tribe saying, okay, we're going to merge and go through the whole post-merge plan. So do you want to just walk us through that and kind of how you decided to even go about making that kind of risky maneuver before the merge?
Yeah, well, what I wanted to do was I said, I really kind of had in a similar position to where Kim was in Survivor One World. It was like, okay, well, we have the numbers now. The men could all stick together. But playing that out, if we go back to the original men's alliance with the six men, all of a sudden I'm probably fifth or sixth on the totem pole there. If I keep this new Jabiru alliance together, and actually I do the opposite of what Kim chose to do in her season, and I guess it worked out better for Kim. But what I chose to do is let's keep this new configuration. I like this with Dina, with Jenna, with Alex, and Mateo. I like this five-some better. And I knew also from Jenna that we were going to pull Heidi in once we got to the merge. So I said, okay, well, we're going to have the numbers anyway when we do this. Plus, I'm going to be in a better position. I mean, it would have been hard to say. I guess out of those five, you could have probably said that either any of me or Dina or Jenna or Alex were the ones that was, you know, probably most calling the shots. And I would argue, that I felt like it was, I mean, Dina would probably say it was her. Alex would probably say it was him. Jenna would say it was her. I would say it was me, but I wasn't, as much. There was no one person that's like, hey, I'm the leader of the group. We're all doing what I say. It was very much a collaboration at that point in time.
Sure. And now, you know, I brought this up a few times before on this podcast from you, actually, talking about knowing where everyone stands and most importantly, where everyone thinks they stand. And now that you're at the merge, you really have your first opportunity to do that with literally everyone in the game, which we see coming in, coming to play big time down the line with all these flips.
No, I just had I think I have one of my strong suits, you know, as a Survivor player and as a person, I think that if I sit down with somebody, I think I can, you know, after, you know, sit down with this person for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I think I can establish a very good rapport, with, you know, whomever I'm sitting with. And I think that comes out of being just a flexible person. There are some people in life and in Survivor who are just very rigid. They are who they are no matter who's around, no matter where they go. They're going to be that kind of person. I think I'm the kind of person that I adapt to my environment. If I'm with, you know, loud, extroverted people, I'm more extroverted. If I'm with, you know, quiet, reserved people, I'm more reserved. So I think that that's being a chameleon is something that's good on Survivor because you can helps you relate to as many different kinds of people as possible.
Yeah. So you've had the chance to develop these relationships with all these people at this point, but there are two people who have never been in your tribe so far, and those two people are Heidi and Christy. What do you make of those two coming to the merge?
Well, I was so excited to meet Heidi throughout the whole game. Yeah, as well documented. I don't know if Heidi is that excited to meet me. But then it turns out when we get to the merge that she seems very eager to meet me. Now, kudos to Heidi. In hindsight, it seems quite clear that, you know, there may have been some manipulation going on her part. Perhaps she was not as interested as she has been leading on at this point in the game. But a lot of people feel like that, like I've heard a lot of times, like, oh, well, that, you know, this cost you the game because you were thinking with the wrong head. And you can say that, but I think that a lot of people, like, the problem with that is that ultimately I turn on both of these women. So it's hard to say that I was, you know, really mis-, like, okay, I definitely played up more for the camera, and I knew, like, the producers are like, oh, this is good, give us more of this. And so I would, you know, probably, for effect, I overstated my feelings for Heidi. I think Ryan at the first Tribal Council says I'm in love with her. And I even say at the time, like, love is a very strong word considering I've never met this person. But, you know, it was, you know, overstated on my part. But, I mean, Heidi was very friendly when I first met her in the game.
Any thoughts about Christy?
I liked Christy. I didn't have any sort of strong feelings. I actually become closer with Christy later on after the merge. But I think actually, looking back, I think there's a few scenes, even in the merge episode, where I'm like in the, you know, off talking to Christy and introducing myself to her. And, you know, Christy was somebody else that I had, like, you know, I didn't know she was deaf before the game started. So we had a few, like, sort of like when we weren't allowed to talk to each other, we would smile at each other. So we had a sort of a little bit of a rapport also just from not, you know, talking before the game. So when I finally got to meet her, she was very friendly, and, you know, I got along good with her too.
Sure. Well, regardless of whether it's you, Alex, Jenna, or Dina in charge, you seem to have three common enemies being Dave, Roger, and Butch, which is a sequence of names we hear repeated many, many times in the merge episode where you're going over the boot order. So you want to talk through about how that was kind of decided on?
Well, at this point, being the savvy survivor watchers that we are, we know there's 10 people left, and we know that there is going to be a 9-person, there's a divide where there's 16 people. 9 people are going to be the jury in the final two, the jury of 7 and the final two, and 7 people are going to go off on some vacation to God knows where. And we said, well, who is the person that we would most like to spend the rest of our time with? We said, it would be hilarious. Because we were in, if I could do it over again, being, 33 years old now, as opposed to being 24 years old when I went to go play the game, I'm not super proud of, my behavior in getting rid of Roger from the game. Roger was a nice man. He was bossy, yes, admittedly. But he was not a bad man. Like, he did not deserve to be mocked the way that I took such glee in voting him out. Like, that was not necessary. And it was really, like, it was sort of the kind of thing where it was like using a stick of dynamite to blow up a mosquito. Like, that much effort on my part was not necessary, but to blindside him and get everybody in on it, we're making fun of him. So I would do things a little bit differently now. But we said, oh, it's gonna be so funny. We'll send Roger on the vacation with Ryan, with Daniel, with Joanna, with Jean, with Janet, and we just said, oh, poor Shauna, And so that was, the biggest thinking. And also that Roger was also the guy that was calling the shots from the get-go. So we wanted to vote him out. And Roger's, to his detriment, was not a very savvy player at the game, because the way that he acted once we merged was just not textbook good survivor play.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Roger, the Merge Immunity Challenge was neither Name That Perry Como song nor What Type of Prune Is This?
Oh, sorry.
And so, the rest of the challenge doesn't really matter once he goes out, except for then models start getting naked. So let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, can I talk about the Rogers? Like, he was so stubborn about he didn't even want to wait on the perch to get offered something. We were all like I knew I wasn't going to win. I said, I'm just going to hang out here and get something to eat. And Roger's like, you'll waste more energy standing up there than you'll get. I'm not going to waste my time up here. I know I'm not going home. And, he was so confident about everything.
Yeah. Well,
that's a good story, but I expect a better one involves models stripping their clothes off, so let's get into that quickly.
Sure.
Well, this is the big question I've always had about this, which is, why did they have to take, not that I'm complaining, but why did they have to take their clothes off to go get the treat?
It doesn't really make a lot of sense. I know this is another one of those things, like, why did they vote out Shauna? It doesn't make a lot of sense, but this was very premeditated on their parts, that they had said before we were going to go, like, oh, we'll get naked if they give us Shauna. I was like, oh yeah, you should do that. That's great. That's hilarious. So I don't know why they felt like they needed to do it, but they were both very excited about this idea when they first thought it up. So, it eventually came to be.
Yeah. Do you think they were looking for an excuse to do this and peanut butter happened to be that excuse?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they felt like they really wanted the chocolate and the peanut butter. And they came up with this idea beforehand, before we went out to the challenge. But I don't know why. If they just would have said, hey, Jeff, we'll jump off for chocolate and peanut butter, maybe they felt like he wasn't going to go and get that. He didn't have it there. And he had to go and fly it in. And technically it was Oreos and peanut butter, so I still think they got a little bit of a raw deal.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad. They could have only taken their tops off for Oreos.
Right. I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I add one more thing about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
My biggest regret about all of that is that I wish that I would have you know, I really didn't look at anything. And not that I'm saying like, oh yeah, wish I would have seen that, because that's not what I'm saying. And you know, this you know, a magazine I could have bought about a year later, and I could have seen everything in a much, much better form. But I do wish that I would have tried to look and fallen off the perch, because I think it would have been so much of a better button to that. And I think that they would have shown that every single time that they play that clip. And I think that would have been a little bit of like at the time I'm like, well, I don't want to be the guy that falls off because of this. And then that's what my claim to fame is. I don't know if that would have been my claim to fame, if I would have gone through life then as the guy who fell off the thing when the girls got naked for the chocolate and peanut butter. But I think it would have been a very funny exclamation point on the end of that scene.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been good stuff. But anyway, well, speaking of good stuff, on the Roger boot, I want to personally congratulate you on one of my favorite Tribal Council voting confessionals I've ever seen, and I think people at home will know what I'm talking about.
Yes, the Casey Kasem.
That's right. Yeah, that was fantastic, and I'm glad, you know, a decade later that I'm finally in person able to tell you that I liked it. So this is after this vote where we see you really start kind of manipulating Matthew and sending him
Hold on, can I tell you a funny story about that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, cut me off whenever.
I was really like, you know, I'm so proud of myself, out of, to do that. So, you know, we go to the tribal council and I go to do that and I'm like, here's a long distance dedicated, you know, I do the whole thing. And then, you know, and then I'm singing the song, and I put the thing, and I come back to my seat and Jeff Probst is steamed. At me and he's like, oh, I bet you, you know, apparently the tribal council, the acoustics of the tribal council is very conducive for noise to travel the 8 feet between where I'm singing and where the rest of the people are standing in complete silence. So, Jeff is like, I bet you, you know, you think that's so funny. Well, let me just tell you, I can swear to God, there is no chance that will ever make it on the show, ever. Okay? Like, okay, I'm sorry. So it always tickles me that it is in the show after Jeff, like, really was so furious about the whole thing.
What would you beef with it?
I don't know if it was that it was too loud. I don't know if it was too jokey, or if he felt like they weren't going to clear the song. Because, I mean, that they had to pay money to the song also. So, I mean, God knows how much – if they spent $50,000 or whatever to clear na-na-na-na, hey, goodbye. I mean, I think they had to clear it. I don't know if it's not enough bars or whatever. But Jeff was just besides himself, very mad about the whole thing.
Great. Now we have to clear that song.
Yeah.
This is where we see you start truly just manipulating Matthew to kind of send him on these wild goose chases, which is a very fun storyline, I think, over the course of the season for pretty much everyone but Matthew. Do you want to go into that whole process?
Sure. I mean, so we had Matthew around. And so, with like, the real alliance that was going on was, you know, you sort of had – it was, you know, you had me, you had Alex, you had Dina, you had Jenna. And so, but Jenna sort of, you know, she had Heidi very much in tow, and Dina sort of had Christy very much in tow. But at no point was the plan for Matthew to go to the final three, four with anybody. So it's like, well, when you're on Survivor, you can't just have people, you know, floating around not thinking that they're part of the plan. So I don't know exactly what we told. Matthew that it was – there was a sort of a men's alliance happening.
Something about a chain.
Yeah, and also then you had Butch, who nobody was doing anything with. Nobody wanted any part of Butch. So we were going to vote out – we were trying to vote out Dave because he was the biggest immunity threat. And I did not like the fact that him and Heidi had gotten very close. And I felt like, you know, my MO on Survivor is I feel like that, you know, if there's a couple – that tends to not be a good thing. And, so you gotta, you know, vote out Dave because he's sleeping next to Heidi. And so, we're voting him out. But in the meantime, like, we gotta vote out, you know, you're just trying to keep Matthew busy and then ultimately trying to keep Butch from, you know, we don't want there to be some sort of like, an uprising where the people on the bottom sort of get together. Not that we were super worried about that, but, you know, you're kind of bored. And you have a lot of time on your hands. Like, okay, so let's work on this.
Yeah, sure. And we ultimately see Dave end up going in a very straightforward boot. Did you ever even consider anything else there?
No. Dave was, you know, Dave is like a total package. He's a good looking guy. He's well spoken. He's smart. He's good in the challenges. I don't think he's not much of a cutthroat Survivor player. And, I mean, he's a great guy in real life, but I mean, he was just, you know, sort of like a Captain America type and somebody that we just had to get rid of.
Going back to you manipulating Matt, there's this great scene where you're sitting in the camp with a few other people, and you're telling them about how you're feeding soy to Matt, who's feeding soy to Birch, and that you have this sort of running around in circles chasing each other. Do you think that was kind of a mistake in retrospect, because it kind of highlighted to those other people that you actually have some measure of control over people, and that you weren't playing the kind of under the radar game that maybe they thought
I
you were?
I never really thought of that. I mean, but my gut tells me that no. I mean, ultimately, I think I was done in the game that everybody felt like I would win. So, I mean, maybe that speaks to that they felt like, okay, well, Rob really was, you know, controlling what was going on, even from, you know, way back then. So it's possible, but I don't think that, you know, that would be super high on. If you're going to autopsy why I didn't win, I don't think that that's too high up on the list of why I ultimately didn't win the game.
Sure. So you don't think it ever really registered with them that, hold on, if Rob has control over Matt and none of us really have that same kind of bond with him, that if those two are allowed to stay in the game together for too long, then maybe they could become more powerful.
No, because it never really, nobody ever came after me because I was, you know, I had this thing going on with Matt and Butch. Like, everybody was sort of, you know, what ultimately ended up happening was that, you know, Matt and Butch were sort of just like discarded, and Christy was just discarded after Dina went into the, and not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but, you know, I sort of was the only one who thought there was any use for these people in the game, whereas the other remaining players just felt like, okay, well, they're just, you know, dead men walking. So they didn't have any use for them, and nobody ever, it maybe had Dina stuck around, she might have seen it as a threat that I was keeping Butch and Matt at an arm's length, but nobody, it never ended up coming into play in the game.
Actually, before we get into the next round, one thing I wanted to ask you about is the immunity challenge during the Dave boot. This is a trivia one, and if you can answer right, you get to chop someone's rope. And this is one where I think I've given you credit historically over the years as the first and one of the only people ever to just get them all wrong so you don't have to cut anyone's rope.
I see, I had the right idea, but I had poor execution because I said, this is, you know, going into my fatal flaw, I said, well, I always thinking of the people at home, I said, I want, you know, I'm going to get all the answers wrong because this becomes like a war of attrition. You cut my rope, then you get a question right, then I cut your rope. And you go back and forth, and it's always like the person who got the least questions wrong, or least questions right, ends up winning the challenge. So I said, okay, well, I'm not going to get any of the questions right until that there's a question of what is a Bushmaster? And, I thought this was a little racy too for Survivor, that it was A, a snake, B, a park ranger, C, a camel, or D, a porn star. And I said, okay, now I'll be able to tell the people at home that I'm trying to get the questions wrong on purpose so they know how smart I am, that I'm throwing the challenge and I'm not really getting the questions wrong on purpose. So I hold up my card, D, porn star, and Jeff Probst is like, he gets mad. He says, Rob, you really think the porn star, really? And then everybody, like Dina and Heidi and Jenna, are like, Rob, like, come on. And then so everybody just cut my rope after that.
Was that not shown on TV? Because from my memory, what was shown on TV was four normal answers and you then just saying, oh, I thought it was a porn star before you read the options. Was that?
Oh, maybe, you know, maybe, yeah. Maybe I have it wrong. You know, I have to go back and check the tape.
It's okay. So not to like nail you or whatever.
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't remember.
This is gotcha journalism at its finest.
Either way, it was. I thought it was racy for them to have it on the show.
Yeah, I was surprised when they put it in the final cut. Either way, because you definitely did say that on air.
So I can't imagine what D was that I picked. If it was none of the above or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember the specifics. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
It sounds plausible. Anyway, so going back to the game for a minute, The next boot we see is Dean's boot, and this is the first time in the game where it seems like the move you make isn't the kind of standard thing that you'd expect. What was your reasoning behind voting out Dean in there? Because it seems like you two had a pretty good thing going.
Yeah, so what was going on, sort of, and this was something that they didn't really do a great, it was kind of complicated, and they didn't do a really good job depicting it in the show. They sort of simplified it. But what had happened was there had always been some sort of a tension in our, like, that foursome that I had mentioned of who was really calling the shots. And I think Dina felt like she was really calling the shots and that she had Jenna in her pocket and she had Christy in her pocket. And then Alex felt that he was sort of calling the shots in the game. And he had, you know, me, and he had, and he felt like he had Jenna and Heidi in his pocket. So there was sort of like this very cold war going on between Alex and Dina. So, you know, it comes time to that the next person that was going to go home, I think Matt was going to go home. We said, okay, Matt is, okay, it's time to get rid of Matt. Butch isn't a threat. And so, Matt will be the next person to go home. But Dina, for whatever reason, started to get, feel like, we gotta get rid of Alex. And I was like, oh, really? You wanna get rid of Alex here? Cause I thought he's kinda with us. And she said, Dina's like, we gotta get rid of Alex. Alex, he's got this going on. He's the biggest threat. Gotta get rid of Alex. And I said, okay, let's do it. So, in this episode, we have a reward challenge where it's like the bow and arrow, like your indigenous weaponry challenge.
That's right.
Colin. So, this is all going on. And so, it comes down to Alex wins the challenge and he takes Jenna with him and they go into this coffee house. Again, I don't know why they always give survivors so much coffee. It seems like, you know, people who haven't eaten, empty stomach, you know. It doesn't seem like a good fit, but they love to give the survivors coffee. But anyway, long story short is, so they're off on the challenge. We come back. Butch and Matt go fishing. They're in the boat talking about God knows what. So then we're left at our base camp. It's me, Dina, Heidi, and Christy. And Dina starts in with this, we got to get rid of Alex. See how he won the challenge? We got to get rid of him. It's time for Alex to go. He's working with Jenna. And, so we're all on board with this. And Christy's like, okay, sure. Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah. Heidi's like, okay. So Alex and Jenna come back and not, you know, 10 minutes after they're back, Heidi goes and tells Jenna and Alex, Dina is trying to get rid of Alex. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have done that. I would have, you know, I think we could have handled this better. So now Alex is furious. It's like, Dina's got to go. We got to get rid of Dina. She's doing this. She's doing that. Got to get rid of Dina. So I was sort of in a position where I probably could have swung the vote and gone on Dina's side. But it was going to come at the expense of a lot of political capital in the game. I was going to have to explain to Butch and Matt why we were voting out Alex, and chances are it could have gotten back. It would have gotten back. It was an easier move for me to stick with Alex and let Dina think that Alex was going home, but it was definitely something that I was not sure about the right way to go. The thing that bothered me about Dina and her game, you know, she got crazed about wanting to get Alex out at that point in time. And I didn't like that. And then I felt like that Dina had a lot of final twos or final three scenarios floating around. Like I felt like she had sort of Jenna and Christy, and then she had me and Jenna. And so I felt like Dina, like, had, like, three different people that she was all saying were going to all be in the final three with her, if that makes sense. Like, she was lying to somebody. And I said, I don't like that. I feel like Dina is being a little deceptive here with all this. Now, who knows? Maybe I was actually in her plans, but I was worried that at some point Dina was going to say, hey, it needs to be all women here in the finals.
Okay, now it's impossible to talk about this vote here at the final eight without talking about the next vote at the final seven, because it seems like the decision that you make here is going to inform the decision that you make there. So let's talk about that second decision for a minute. So you've just voted off Dina, there are now seven people left. What are your thoughts going into this vote before Alex decides to randomly tell you that he has you?
I'm completely solid with that the final four of the game is going to be me, Alex, Heidi, and Jenna. There's no question in my mind.
And how do you see that playing out for you? What did you get down
well,
to
the
those
thing
four?
Was that earlier in the game, Alex said to me that he felt like that he would, if me and him were in a bicycle race and my bicycle broke down, he said he would give me his bicycle and so I could go on in the race. And he said that about the game. And he said, I will let you, like, I know how much you want this. I know how much this is your dream to do this. I would let, you know, if the time ever comes, I will, you know, lay down on my sword. And then all of a sudden things started to change in the game. And so, like, this group of me, Alex, Heidi, and Jenna, it's sort of a weird group because it's like Alex sort of has like there's like some sexual tension going on with Heidi and kind of with Jenna. Like, it's very flirtatious with them. And I'm sort of like, you know, the nerdy best friend of the cool guy. And they're, you know, here's Betty and Veronica hanging out. I don't know if I'm getting my Archie references right. I'm sort of like the Jughead that's sort of like hanging out with Archie. So it's kind of weird. And then there's also like some weird stuff going on with like Heidi is talking about how like the four of us need to go into business and open up a Sonic together. And I'm like, and she's like, it doesn't matter who wins because we're gonna open up this Sonic and it's gonna be a really good business. And I'm like, I don't know.
Like the drive-through place.
Yeah. Yes. And so I don't want to open up a Sonic. And so, but they're like really talking about this. And I'm like, what? I don't want to do this at all. and they're like, it doesn't matter who wins and we'll pool the money together. Like, and so, like, I kind of, like, narked on Heidi about this to production.
Yeah.
I was like, look, like, this is against the rules, but they're talking about, like, splitting up the money. And then we got, like read the riot act by production. Like, just so you know, you're not allowed to do this. So I felt a little bit, better about all that. But, like, things are getting weird. It's getting very, incestuous, this foursome. And I'm not really loving it because I know that Heidi and Jenna are not ever going to turn on each other. So I feel like, I'm in this sort of final four here with two people that are never going to turn on each other. And also, I think me and Alex are like, I think that it's going to be like at loggerheads when we get to the final four. Cause I think like, okay, well, me and Alex are this, but I'm like, well, Alex is getting very close with these girls. And, you know, I easily could be the fourth person out. But, I'm not acting on this until Alex says to me, really out of the blue, sort of confirms fears that I'm already having. Like, just so you know, we get to the final four. I forget exactly what he says, but something to the extent of how they're never going to turn on each other. And then he's going to vote against me, sort of.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Don. So, Rob, your game gets a lot of praise in general, but I think one of the most common criticisms when people do make it is that you needed to be told by Alex that you're in that poor position. Is that a fair criticism,
I mean,
do you think?
Sure, it's a fair criticism. You could certainly say that. I mean, it doesn't mean that things wouldn't have been different. I mean, I was not probably going to end up going to the final four with me. If I didn't feel good about that, when it gets down to the final five and it's me, Alex, Heidi, Jenna, and Mateo or Butch, like, I think I would have, you know, done something else. Like, it's hard to imagine that. I'm still the same person on day 30, you know, that would be on day 34, day 35, that I am on day 29 and day 30. So I would have to imagine that if, you know, it's still in me, the instinct to switch. I mean, on day four, I'm talking about I want to vote out Roger. So I think even if it didn't happen at that point, I wouldn't have been surprised if in this other timeline when we get down to the final five. I guess we would have voted out Matthew at that point. So maybe Matthew's gone. And then it's, me. I mean, who knows? I mean, at five, I mean, it could be, maybe I could, me and Jenna and Heidi could, you know, turn on Alex. I mean, something would have gave, and I don't know if necessarily that, if I didn't feel good about that final four scenario, I think I would have, done something.
Okay. Going back to the Dina book quickly. Sorry. I just thought of a question that I wanted to ask about that. It seems like if you vote out Dina there, then you are, Not the only thinking player left in the game, but you're definitely the best player left in the game by a significant margin. Did that kind of enter into your mind as a reason for voting her out at all?
I mean, it didn't hurt that Dina was a good player out of the game.
Sure.
So, but it came down to I had to pick a side there with Dina or with Alex. And, you know, I was kind of sneaky about it. I didn't let Dina know that it was going to be, that we were going to do it that way. And I also tried to, I wasn't sure if Dina knew that I was in on it also. Like, I tried to, play it up like I was surprised at the tribal council. I think I may have voted in a different, handwriting, or the way they didn't count all the votes. So, I think I was trying to play up that, I had no idea this was going to happen.
Okay, that's interesting.
Okay. Yeah, because it seems like the Dina boot there makes a lot more sense if you're planning at that stage to then flip on Alex round.
But I wanted Dina's jury vote. I wanted Dina's jury vote. I wanted Dina to think that I was with her the whole time.
Right. Do you think then, in retrospect, it might be better to go with Dina on that vote? Because it seems like if Alex doesn't, just randomly self-destruct there, then things become a lot more difficult for you going forward.
I mean, it's hard to say. There's so many different factors. I mean, let me think. If I have to write down who's still there in the game. So let's say I go with Dina. So me, so Rob and Christy vote for Alex. And then I bring Matt over. And then Jenna, Heidi, and Alex vote for Dina. So I guess Butch would really be the swing vote, but Butch was close with Alex, and I don't know if Butch would have voted against, Alex in that spot, especially to go into a new alliance with Dina and Christy, who he was not particularly, close with. I sense that maybe, Butch might have said something to Alex. I mean, it's possible that, I mean, who knows? It's hard to say, how exactly it would, turn out in that instance. You know, it's a lot of.
But you were able to sway Butch to vote Alex vote, right?
I mean, it's possible, but honestly, I really felt like, in the immunity threat, I still don't think it was ever going to, work out in my favor, because I don't think that there was a person in the game who ever wanted to go with me to the final two. So whatever final three scenario you're going to put me in, whether it's Dina and Christy and me in the final two, I'm not going to win that last challenge. And Dina is going to take Christy, or Christy's going to take Dina. And, unless I got there with Matt and Butch, which I ultimately wanted to do, and then if it doesn't matter if as long as I can beat Butch in that final immunity challenge, then I think I would have won the game.
Yeah.
Okay. One more question about the Alex vote quickly, and then I'll see the floor to Colin. So once Alex tells you this, and you've decided that you're going to go with Butch, Matt, and Chrissy instead, is it certain that you're going to vote Alex, or do you consider voting out maybe Jenna or Heidi instead? Because it seems like Alex, sure, he's going to prioritize taking the girls over you, but at the same time, he's been waiting to tell you that, and it seems like you've had a good thing going with him since the beginning, whereas Jenna and Heidi are together, they're maybe not as close to you as Alex is. So what was your thought process there?
I felt like to vote out Alex, who was the biggest immunity threat in the game at this point, far and away, and I think that, Matthew there too, but Alex was going to be, a real threat to win the immunities. And it seemed like, you know, to vote out Jenna or to vote out Heidi seemed like that wasn't really a big move because, you know, it still felt, you know, it just felt like there were two of them, and to get rid of one wasn't really as big of a blow as to, you know, to cut the head off the snake, where Alex was sort of, like, I felt like if I voted out Alex, Jenna and Heidi would just spin out of control. And, I mean, to some degree, they kind of did. Like,
yeah.
Got their act back together by the end. But they did kind of, you know, just spin out. And, like, you know, Jenna's talking about she wants to quit the game. Heidi is like, you know, she has, like, did Heidi get bit by the spider yet? Was she, like, unable to walk?
I think that was actually right around that indigenous weaponry challenge.
Yeah,
she got carried in by either Alex or Dave, so whenever it happened.
Heidi's not really able to walk that good, so it just seemed like if you're going to make a big move at that point, I mean, make the big move, vote out, take out Alex instead of Jenna or Heidi.
Yeah, and I think actually another way to look at that is, in order to do this, it's not just a guarantee that you're going to get all the remaining votes to vote with you. But I think Alex was very much viewed as the leader of your foursome that was, you know, we saw the scenes of the four of you just kind of hanging out around camp while the other three went and worked. And they're all saying, oh, those four people, they're arrogant. They feel like they don't have to do anything. And so when you, as you put, go to the people on the bottom and promise them dreams of the top, and in this case to vote out Alex, was it really just that easy to get them on board with you?
Well, the hard part was to go to Matthew and to say to Matthew, hey, you know how I've been telling you that all this stuff is going on? Yeah, that wasn't true at all. But that was something that I had seen from Dr. Will. And it's sort of a weird thing in life and on reality TV. When you are honest with somebody about your lying, people find it very refreshing. Like, they find it very, very endearing even. Of like, hey, I want to tell you that I've been lying to you about something. And people say, wow, yeah, that's, you know, I feel real, that's, they'll feel like, what? You know, you're a liar. You lied to me. Like, no, I want to come clean, and I want to confess to you something that I've been doing. And, you know, it makes sense. But people like Matthew, like we really, I felt like Matthew and I formed a real bond at that point in time, which, you know, from day 30 until, you know, if you were to break up the game by, you know, day groups of 10, those last 10 days, I really trusted, Matt. I mean, that he was the guy I wanted to go to the end with.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on from there. Okay, this is actually good stuff. The family visit is something that I'm very interested about. This is, you know, something people like Dom and myself and people, you know, our age and our demographic see the family visit and we're like, yeah, it wouldn't really mean that much to me. And you were roughly in our age and demographic when you were out there. What's it really like in actually doing it compared to what you thought it might be like?
The family visit or the actual show?
No, the family visit specifically.
Well, the family visit, like, people, like, always say, like, oh, it's, what's the big deal, blah, 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 like, you know, you're only gone, like, 5 weeks, but it's just that you're so cut off from your entire world, and I just remember, like, having, like, very vivid dreams. You dream very vividly on Survivor. I don't know if it's between the malaria medication, or you're not really even sleeping that good in the first place, but you have very vivid dreams, and all I wanted to do was just tell my family I was okay. Like, I'm out here, I didn't die, like, I'm doing good, and just, we didn't know that, like, now for the survivors, I think they're like, oh, okay, if we make it to day 33, they're gonna fly our parents out here, that's gonna be so cool. You know, Tarzan is saying, just keep me in the game long enough so I could see my wife out here. But we had seen four seasons of Survivor up until then. We had not seen the family visit on Thailand. We left right before the fake merge on Thailand. So we had seen four complete seasons of Survivor. And they had not done, unless they did in Marquesas, I don't really remember, where they flew everybody out there. Like, everybody's loved ones were out there. And they told us in that challenge that, okay, whoever wins, we're going to fly your loved one in from America and you'll spend the day with them tomorrow. Okay, great. We had no idea that everybody's loved ones were hidden in the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big surprise when they say, okay, Rob, you know, here's your mom. Butch, here's your wife. Christy, here's your boyfriend or whatever.
Now, so Final Seven, as we've touched on many times and as you touched on earlier in this show, odd numbers in general are very important. And now Final Six, I think, is really where the end game and setting that up really begins. So what were your plans now with the six people left?
Well, my plans were very straightforward of that, okay, the final four is going to be Rob, Matt, Butch, and Christy. I said, okay, this is perfect. And I said that, you know, look at me against this, with this field of, you know, with Matt and Butch and Christy. This is great. But, and then Jen and Heidi, you know, as I predicted, spin out of control. They're just like cursing at everybody and like, how could you? We hate you. You know, like just going crazy. And so, but I'm like loving it because I'm like, oh, everybody's like, hey, look how mean that those girls are being to me. You know, and I felt like I was being like, it made me sympathetic to Al. Like I felt like that I was like the great liberator for Butch and for Matt and Christy, that they should be like, so appreciative, like, Rob, you saved us. We were going to be all voted out. Now look at us. We're the final four. And look, you know, I felt like, you know, and Jenna and Heidi were just going off on me. And so we had the family visit, which was a nice, like, nice change of pace. You know, we ended up all getting drunk. People think that it was me throwing up in the shelter. It was Butch. He got very sick. But we had a very nice time, everybody. And then we sort of woke up the next day and then Matt won that challenge and everybody was sort of like, oh, Matt, thank you for giving up your visit or giving us the visit. And I sort of like, you know, I was a little childish at the time.
Way to make the tough call.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was like, yeah, like anybody wouldn't do that. Like, oh, now everybody likes Matt. Now I can't go to the end with him because everybody likes him, but it really doesn't make a big difference. But for like one afternoon, I was like, oh, great. Now I can't go at the end with Matt. So, we had this little bit of a pickle also at the time where Jenna and Heidi, who are so horrible to Christy the whole game, they're trying to talk Christy into voting with them. And their offer to Christy is like, oh, well, Rob says he'll only take you to the final four. We'll take you to the final three. And, it's like, yeah, but it's right. Going to be a tie vote at Tribal Council to go to the final three with Jenna and Heidi. I'm offering you a sure thing. Final four, they're offering you something which who knows what could happen. You know, it's only a 50% chance. You know, Jenna could, it's not just Christy could draw the purple rock. Jenna could draw the purple rock. Heidi could draw the purple rock. So there, I'm offering you a 100% chance to get to the final four. They're offering you a 50% chance to get to the final three. Like, I mean, this should not be too hard of a decision, Christy. But so there was this sort of going on. So, and I'm sort of like doing the math in my head. I'm like, oh, seven people on the jury. Alex hates me. Jenna hates me. Heidi hates me. I have to get every vote that's left if I'm going to win the game. And I said to my mom that I said to her, Mom, I think I'm going to get to the end, but I don't think I'm going to win. So because everybody was so mad at me at that time. So I had sort of the brainstorm like, oh, everybody hates Jenna. I should go to the end with Jenna because she's been nasty to Christy and you know, Butch isn't going to vote for her. And then, I'll get Dina's vote and I'll get, and she can have Alex and Heidi, but maybe I'll get Matt's vote. I'll get everybody else's vote. So I take Jenna aside and I say, hey, Jenna, look, I don't want to tell you the details of how this is going to happen. It was final seven. How would you like to go to the final two with me? And she's like, well, how are you going to do it? I'm like, well, you know, I prefer not to divulge the whole plan right now, but I just want to know if you're interested in working with me, that I have a plan where I think that I can beat you in the end. I'd love to take you to the final two. Now, if I was Jenna, I would be like, this is a great offer. It's final six now. I'm probably going to go home next. Like, Rob is offering to take me to the final two. This is great. But instead, and, you know, kudos, give her credit that she's won the game. She instead decides to blow up my spot to everybody. which I said, what were you crazy that, I was going to take you to the final two, that you're spitting in my face and trying to get me voted out. So I thought that was very spiteful of her, when I was really looking out for her best interest. I was trying to take her to the end. But she, you know, she snubbed my proposal to go to the end. So then, luckily that, I don't know why, it didn't, whatever she was trying to do, it didn't really take. Like I was just like, said to like Butch and Christy, like, oh man, these girls are really jerks. Like, and I said like, well, Jenna, I was lying to you because, that I was telling you a fake plan so just to throw you off. And those other guys believed that. So, I did dodge a bullet that day. I'm like, okay, well now no more. I did feel like though I was my, you know, political capital, which I've mentioned a couple times, had been pretty much spent at that point. Like, if I was to make any more big moves, I think I would have really, gotten in trouble. But, you know, what I would, so this plan to take Jenna to the final two, and again, it was kind of a half-baked plan. I was going to vote out Heidi at the final six. This is what I had worked out. So I was going to vote out Heidi at the final six. So then it would have been me, Jenna, Matt, Christy, and Butch. Then at the final five, I was going to vote out Matthew, then vote out Butch, and then I was going to go to the final three with Jenna and Christy. And the brilliance of this plan was that Jenna and Christy hated each other and that both of them would want to take me to the final two. Now, there would have been some problems along the way. Matt won immunity at the final five. I mean, and at some point I need to get people to vote for me. After I blindsided every single person on the jury, I don't know if that's going to happen. But that, again, I was a little hungover that day and that was sort of what I was working on.
Yeah, because going back to what you said earlier about you thinking that no matter what your kind of end game configuration was, nobody was going to take you to the final two with them. And then you said a little bit later after that that you're considering the final three of you, Matt, and Butch. It seems like that if you're still assuming that you're going to have to win that challenge because no one can take you, does it make sense to leave Matt in them because he is probably the biggest challenge right there in the game at that
point?
See,
the flaw in my thinking after seeing four seasons of Survivor, and I know that you guys are you know, Survivor historians as well, that in every season in the first four, they did the fallen comrades, how well do you know the other people in the tribe challenge. And that's what I thought the challenge ultimately was going to be. So if not at the final four, then certainly at the final three when it was going to be at nighttime in front of the jury. So I had no doubt I was going to win that immunity challenge. I had already won the immunity challenge that was about, you know, how well do you know the people in your tribe? But I knew everybody, the name of everybody's kids, everybody's pets, where people went to college. And I was, you know, the other people in the final four, Matt, who didn't know, you know, couldn't answer any of those questions. Butch, you know, who probably would have problems with people he knew his whole life with, you know, answering those sort of things. Jenna, who just didn't care enough to know that stuff. So I felt very good about my chances to win an immunity down the stretch here to get that. But for whatever reason, they stopped doing that. You know, they didn't do it in Thailand, but I didn't see that season yet. But I saw Vesepio win that challenge. I know that the whole thing with Lex and Big Tom, maybe the Lex and Big Tom thing was why they stopped doing. But, you know, I didn't know that in 2002.
Yeah.
All right. So you've walked us through what happened up to the point where Jenna blows up your plan in front of everyone.
Yeah.
What happens between then and the time when you decide to vote out Chrissy?
So we have this challenge that's sort of like a shuffleboard game where – like, I have the idea where I say, if I win the immunity necklace, I'm going to give it to Christy as a sign of good faith and say, Christy, here, I'm going to give you the necklace if you vote with us. And so, lock it down. So, we do this, challenge and I actually am in a good position to win this shuffleboard challenge. I think I have my puck is like on the board and then Butch, like, does a shot and, like, knocks my piece off the thing, and Jenna ends up winning, like, at a, like, total, he ends up knocking her thing into, like, Butch, come on! We're working together! What are you? Like, he would have been better off just throwing the puck into the ocean. instead of, like, why? I'll never know why, he ultimately did that. But, so he knocks my puck out of the way. Jenna wins immunity. And now I'm like, okay, well, and now Christy is really being wishy-washy with me. And I'm like, Christy, you got to tell me what's going on. And I'm getting very, very nervous about the whole thing. And I'm like, Christy, one way or another, you gotta tell me what you're doing. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. I gotta wait and see how it goes. And maybe something that she says, maybe I'll have to vote that way. And I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like this uncertainty. Cause I never want to go to tribal council and not know how it's gonna vote, how the vote is gonna go. So now the wheels are turning. And I said, okay, what are we gonna do? And so I don't know how I came up with this, but I said, okay, now, it's like, Steed, it's like pop quiz hot shot. Like, what do? It's like, you shoot the hostage. I went to Jenna and Heidi and I'm like, all right, this is a little out there. What do you guys think? What if we vote out Christy? And they were like, we love it. Let's do this. Okay. All right. Here's what we do. And I may have gone to Mateo first and he was my closest ally. And I said, okay, Matt, what do you think? We're going to vote out Christy. And he's like, he said, okay. So, me and Matt talked to Jenna and Heidi and said, okay, is this what we're going to do? And they said they loved the plan. That was great. It was perfect. And they were on board 100% because it would have been Jenna had the necklace, but then she gives it to Heidi, which we could talk about. Whatever. So they loved the plan, but we said, okay, we're not going to tell Butch. And there was a lot of stipulations. It's like, okay, the four of us are going to all stay in each other's sight and we're not going to tell. Nobody talks to Christy unsupervised. Nobody talks to Butch because we didn't want any sort of switcheroo where it's like, okay, now me and Matt vote for Christy and then Jenna and Heidi get Christy to vote for me. I trusted them. I had been in an alliance with these people for, quite some time in the game. And I know you feel like, well, how did you really know? But it's like, you knew that this, everybody was, you know, there was no funny business that was going to happen.
One of your lines I thought was very good was about how, you'd already screwed over so many people, yet the people in the game all seemed so eager to work with you at this point, like they hadn't been paying attention the last 32 days or however long it was. And I was wondering about, was it really that much like that, where it's the short-term memory, I think, is the concept I really want to get into in Survivor, about both from an in-game perspective and also on a jury perspective. Because it seems like in the game, as we saw at least with your game, despite whatever you've done to people even a round or two before, they were still willing to work with you. And that, I think a lot of that is just you specifically rather than a random person. I think you're very good with people. Whereas on the jury, if you vote someone out, they'll hold it against you for 20 days.
Yeah, so you're saying the people that stay in the game are more forgiving?
Yeah, for whatever reason, they seem to have just this short-term memory, and I think it may be, maybe it's specific to certain seasons where there are people trying to just move on to the next round.
I don't know.
I thought it was kind of an interesting thing that you had mentioned in your confessionals. Mostly it's a joke, granted.
Yeah, once you're out of the game, you're out of the game. You have no more chances to get to the money. But if I'm still in the game, it's like, are you going to cut off your nose to spite your face, or are you going to work with me? And I didn't vote with you in the last round. But, hey, in this round, we have a chance to work together and move forward in the game. So why not work with me? I mean, yeah, you can hold a grudge, but you're not going to get closer to the money by not working with me.
Yeah, one thing you mentioned, Rob, was Jenny giving the necklace to Heidi. Do you know what her reasoning was behind that?
I think there's been some revisionist history in this that, I think that Jenna has said that she felt like this was like a bit of like a highly strategic, that this was to make sure that this, you know, somehow messed with our plan because we were going to, in case we were going to try to pull something funny and all vote for Heidi. Then she gave Heidi the necklace. And then that would have really thrown us off. Like we would have voted for Butch instead. What do we do? It would have been, I don't think it was anything. I mean, I think it was just that they were such close friends that Jenna wanted to do something, for Heidi. You know, Jenna starts, this is around the time of the game where Jenna starts talking about, it looks kind of hopeless for Jenna and Heidi. Like they get a little bit of a reprieve here, in 3 more days, but that was really ultimately what it was supposed to be. Jenna starts talking about how she wants to quit the game. I think this is the first time that you start to see some of that sort of take place. Like Heidi, at this point in the game, and it changes at the final four. Heidi wants it more than Jenna, and I think Heidi is more than willing to say when Jenna says, "I want to give you the necklace because I know how bad you want to be here." Heidi doesn't at all say, "No, Jenna, I can't do that." Heidi is very quick to say, "Yeah, okay, do that." Let's do that. So I think it was just a nice gesture on Jenna's part. I've read where people have, you know, felt like it was some sort of a strategic masterstroke that really had an impact in the game. I think it was more of a triviality of like, it wasn't going to change anything. Nobody had ever done it before. So they figured, why not do it? And it was a nice gesture for Jenna to do to Heidi. And, that's sort of where it happened.
Yeah, sure. It hasn't happened many times since, probably most notably Ice Cream Scooper Eric. But so anyway, this is, to get into something a little bit more in-depth strategically, now that we're at the Final Five, I think Final Five obviously is a very, very important time in Survivor because it completely sets up who's probably going to be the Final Three. And this is more often a concept, I think, in Big Brother. But in the end game of Survivor, I think your season is an excellent example of, on your end, the Christie vote specifically being in a case of not so much who you're taking out, but rather who you're leaving in, because you're now in such a position at Final Five where there are two very distinct pairs, I think, where Jenna and Heidi are obviously going to work together. Butch and Matthew clearly have that kind of they're clearly bonded together, and you're kind of sitting there in the middle. And I certainly think this is a group of people who, between the four of them, are never going to team up amongst the four of themselves to take you out.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think that might be a little overstated. Like, Butch and Matt were clearly fishing buddies, and they definitely had something – some working relationship together, but I think that strategically I was more aligned with Matt than Butch was. And I think that the tell on that is that, we'll get to the final four, but, Matt doesn't really seem to have any allegiance to Butch when we get to the final four. So while they were definitely good friends, I think they still are close to this day. I think that, if it was a party, yeah, Jen and Heidi would be hanging out and talking with each other and Matt and Butch. But I think that Matt was more my go-to guy.
Yeah, no, I would concur with that. I just mean in the sense of Jen and Heidi are always going to be voting together, and Butch and Matthew and you know the whole at Final Five, they're saying, oh, the three guys are just going to pick us off. Yeah. And I don't mean to exclude you from those two guys, and then you're just the third wheel.
But you
have two. I think you're the one who's going to get to decide who goes to the final three.
Yeah, I know that this has been like the thing that gets the most, the biggest part of my game in the Amazon that gets the most criticism was the Christie vote, and Butch, once in a while he may have a few too many and leave me a voicemail that we shouldn't have voted out Christie, Butch feels like things would have been different, and you don't know. But for me, it was a play to win move to vote out Christie, and I say that because I felt like I won back two jury votes that night. I felt like I was getting rid of Christie, and I was winning back Jenna and Heidi, who hated me, who at least one of them was going to be on the jury. And according to my plan that day, both of them would have been back on the jury. And if I'm sitting next to Matt in the final two, I feel like I know I have Jenna and Heidi's votes again, even if Alex didn't like Matt either. So I felt very good about my position going forward to sit with Matt at the end of the game.
Yeah. Colin, what you're saying is that, sure, if there are two pairs in the game and you're stuck between them, at final five, you're always going to be safe. But at the same time, once you make the decision to go with one of those pairs, you're now stuck at the bottom as a kind of third wheel, and you need to, because if you go to the final three with that pair, those who are going to take each other, you're going to be knocked down to third. And Robert said this is going to be an issue for him because he wasn't expecting to win that challenge. So it's maybe not as good a position as he might like to be there. Now, Rob, you were talking earlier about how you had this plan to maybe take Jenna and Christie to the final three with you. Obviously, once you've voted out Christie, that's no longer possible. So how did you revise your plans going forward after
that? I wanted to go with Butch and Matt for the final three. It was going to be all three of the guys at the end. Butch wasn't gonna win the immunity. Now, I don't know if, I mean, I just sort of like, had a, you know, Matt and I just sort of like had a pact and a deal, and it was like, okay, we sort of, shook on it that we were gonna go, with each other to the final two. So, I mean, I wasn't worried that Matt was going to win the final immunity and take Butch, with him to the end. And, I also suspected that there was going to be, I felt like I could beat Butch in just about any, beat Butch out in any sort of physical challenge.
Yeah, definitely. And, also, especially if it's just coming. Go ahead.
Yeah, especially one involving balance.
Sure. And I think it's another one of those things where, like, if Jenna doesn't bang off those immunities, you probably do end up there with Matthew and Butch. And regardless, Butch probably is not going to win that last challenge. And Matthew presumably is not going to take Butch, the guy who's not screwed over anyone, when he could take Rob, the guy who screwed over most of the jury.
Yeah, I think that it would have been, I think I did a bad job of convincing Matt how much it was better for him to go to the end with me. I think I failed in that instance to, like, I knew it was better for Matt, but I didn't conceive that Matt might not think it was better for him to go to the finals with me.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you actually telling Matt the truth? What would Butch have been harder for Matt to beat than you? And I guess the extension of that is, would you have lost to Butch if somehow you ended up in the final two together?
No, I wouldn't have lost to Butch. Would Matt have lost to Butch? I mean, I think that's an interesting question. I think Dave would have voted for Butch. Alex would have voted for Butch. Roger's not on the jury. I guess I would have voted for Matt. Jen and Heidi, Heidi really didn't like Butch. That I think he said something about PE teachers or something like that. That's really set Heidi off. So maybe Jen and Heidi would have voted for Matt, and I think it would have come down to what Dina and Christy did. So I don't know. It would have been a close fight.
Sure, yeah. And this is another one of those things that we just, just talking about the idea of, we see historically, like, I'll reference Ceri here, where she's in a position at her final four, where if she wins that final fire challenge, in season 12, she's then in a position where both people she's playing the final immunity with are going to take her. Now, I don't think there were any combinations just for you of where if you get with these two people, you can just throw it and know both are going to take you and you're going to beat both of them.
Right.
Because there weren't people, whether correctly or incorrectly, there just wasn't a combination of two people willing to take you. For whatever reason, I think. But I think it's one of those things where I think I think Butch is going to be one of those kind of guys. And, what you've just told us over the last 5 minutes is kind of changing my perception of this. But I always viewed Butch as like, oh, if he's up there with pretty much anyone else who's in that final four, he's just going to kind of win because the jury doesn't hate him as much as they hate whoever he's next to.
But they didn't really – I don't want to say that they didn't respect him, but they didn't think of him highly as a player. And I'm not sure where we are in the game, but I mean, the thing that always made no sense to me was why did Jenna and Matt vote out Butch at the final four instead of voting me out at the final four? They had me dead to rights. They could have voted me out at the final four. There was nothing I could have done. But Jenna felt like Butch didn't deserve to be there as much as I did, and I think that speaks to how much I had won back Jenna's favor from the Christie vote. And I mean, think about it; it makes no sense. Why would they keep me around? I wish I could say it was some master plan, but Jenna had said, like, well, I just don't think Butch deserves to be in the final three. And that's right. Absolutely. And I remember Matt, like, took Butch aside and told him, like, hey, buddy, I just want to let you know it's going to be you tonight. And I remember, like, Butch, like, punched a tree. Like, he was, like, really upset about, getting told the news. And it wasn't a blind side. Like, yeah, Butch, we had a great run, final four, man. So it doesn't make any sense to me. At the time, I was like, oh, man, I'm really getting away with something here.
So he was like your Rick Nelson, just inexplicably booting him right before Final Tribal Council?
Yeah, I don't know why that either of them didn't, like, Jen and Heidi did not really care for Butch. And, I mean, I just don't know why Matt didn't stick up for him more. Matt was like, okay, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Talking about jury votes more generally, obviously this is an important issue because you're thinking about who you want to be sitting there at the finals with, and a big part of that is how you think the jury vote is going to go. Run down, like, the hierarchy of jury votes. So, yeah, who would have beaten who, like, who was the biggest jury player, who couldn't have beat anybody, like, is there anything there that maybe doesn't line with what you're showing on TV?
The one person that I was really afraid of in the game was, believe it or not, Heidi. I was more afraid of Heidi than Jenna at, you know, all throughout the game as far as going to the end, because I felt like Heidi really, really wanted it more. I felt like Heidi was more cutthroat than Jenna. Like, I don't think Heidi would have ever given the necklace to Jenna. So I felt like Heidi was more calculated about everything that went on in the game, believe it or not. And so I feel, and again, she ends up with, you know, a very wealthy, baseball player. Good for Heidi. But I felt like Heidi would have gotten, I felt like she, you know, had Alex's vote. She would, you know, would have had Jenna's vote. She had Dave's vote. So, I mean, that's three votes for Heidi right there, to take. You'd have to sweep everybody else. If you were going to go up against Heidi in the finals, and I felt like, you know, she was, you know, just a more dangerous, player. And I felt like she had, like, she was more athletic also than, even though, you know, her leg was starting to feel better. So I think she was more of a physical threat than I felt Jenna was in the game. As far as, you know, Butch, you know, I feel like he would have been, pretty easy to beat. You know, I never really thought of Butch as a real, threat to go to the end with. And I guess in more recently, I've thought about it, but, you know, if I really, really think about it and dig deep, like, Butch would have gotten Alex's vote against me. He would have gotten Dave's vote. He would have gotten Matt's vote probably. So, I mean, Butch easily, you know, could have done well in the finals against, myself, especially. I don't know, against, you know, against Matt, he might have done okay too. But the matchup I really, really wanted was me against Matt, because I feel like, I would have gotten back all of the people that I pissed off with the Alex vote. I think I would have gotten Alex's vote if I was up against Matt in the finals.
Yeah, one question I had about the jurors was, and this opinion that I have may have been just, influenced by the edit she got, but it occurred to me, sorry for stuttering so much in this question, I don't know why I'm doing it. Did you ever get the feeling that Dina might be more inclined to not vote for a man if a woman was one of the candidates, just blind, no matter who it was?
Interesting. If I was up against Jenna, I think I would have gotten Dina's vote. So I don't think or if I was up against Heidi, I think I would have gotten Dina's vote. So I don't think that it was per se, she was no man over a woman. I think it would have been the right man over a woman she would have voted for.
She seems like a very fair person. That sounds very fair to me.
Yeah.
All right. So let me just go back. Now, final four, or, you know, obviously we see Heidi go at final five. You've mentioned your plan being to go to the end with Butch and Matthew. I assume once Jenna has immunity, that's a no-brainer.
I mean, I didn't really have – I wish I could take more credit for this at final four, but –
No, I'm talking about Final Five, Heidi.
Oh, at Final Five. Yeah, it was a no-brainer. It was like, we're going to vote out either Jenna or we're going to vote out Heidi. Jenna, at this point, wants to quit the game. And so, I mean, if you have two people in the game, one wants to quit, one is going to fight like hell, you vote out the person who's going to fight like hell. And that's what we did. I mean, there was no second guess at the time. You vote out Heidi.
Yeah, that's my mistake. I mentioned Jenna being immune, so the final four, that was all me. But let's talk about final four now, where Jenna is in fact immune. I'm like, Matthew was immune during the Heidi vote. My mistake.
Yeah, and Jenna, amazing recovery. Did not see that coming.
Yeah. Seemed to step it up as soon as it was challenge time. That was actually a pretty beastly challenge too, all things considered, compared to everything else you've done.
It was really, I did not really care for it. It was a, you know, it was a maze that you had to find things, and not only that, you were blindfolded, and it was also raining, so you had to, and, like, the the pieces that you had to find were sort of only indistinguishable by, like, the grooves on them. And because it was raining, you really are, you know, your fingers are all pruney, and it was very difficult to tell one of those pieces from the other. So, I mean, kudos to Jenna for winning that. I mean, I was sort of counting on Matt winning. Now, did Matt? I think that Matt, I mean, I think Matt kind of even says that he threw the final three challenge. Did Matt throw the challenge here? I mean, I don't think he did, but I guess we'll never know. But give Jenna credit here. This was a very impressive win.
Yeah, a very critical win. I imagine she was going had she not won that.
Yeah, she would have gone.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we talked about it briefly, but just they for whatever reason, decide that they're going to vote Butch out instead of you, so you're alive to the final three.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Yeah, good times. So it's, you know, down now to you and Jenna and Matthew, and this ultimately just culminates in a contest between you and Jenna to see who can stand on a log holding a headdress above them and take Matthew to the end for the layup, you know, just the way God intended Survivor.
Yeah, can we back up a little bit to, like, the final day of, you know, the final three?
So, yeah, yeah, by all means.
You know, I had a little bit of a, you know, Jenna and Matt, like, had a better relationship than earlier in the game. And, you know, I just wanted to cover my bases. But once I found out that the challenge was going to be at nighttime, I was, you know, beyond certain that it was going to be right on a pad what this person's what was the name of Heidi's goldfish. You know, I was so certain that's what it was going to be. There has never been another physical immunity challenge to play out in front of the jury to that point, and there's never been to my knowledge another endurance challenge to play out in front of the jury since then. So it really was a real anomaly in the history of the show. I mean, am I missing anything? Like, they've had to make a fire. They've had to have a puzzle piece.
I remember, yeah, they had one in Pearl Islands where they played against the jury. They did the Fallen Comrades in the early seasons. But, yeah, for all the final three challenges, the jury has never been there, and I don't believe has ever been there since.
And there's never been an endurance challenge at a tribal council any other time in the 24 seasons of the show. But I guess that one night in particular, they broke the mold when they came up with that one.
Yeah, well, ultimately we see that not go your way, and Jenna cuts you loose at final three.
Well, I had said to Jenna earlier in the day, I sort of tried half-heartedly to say, like, you know, I really think that me against, you know, you and I in the finals, I think you'd have a better chance with me than you would against Matthew. And she was sort of like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. Like, I was like, you're not buying that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I said this earlier, where I did a bad job of locking it down was, it didn't cross my mind that Matthew would say, ooh, I think both of these guys want to take me to the end. I'm not going to try in the finals. I think I should have done a better job of really locking it down with Matthew and say, Matt, you know you have a better chance with me than you do with Jenna. And I think that would be the case. I mean, I don't think I would have beaten Matt 6-1 like Jenna did. So I think I would have had a, you know, again, hindsight's 20/20. And, you know, what are you going to do? But I think I could have done a better job there.
Okay. And now I know you didn't spend a ton of time at Ponderosa, but we like to ask people about that. And I'm very curious about what it was like back then, because, you know, people we've had on this show have been generally from much more recent seasons. And so, you know, now we see a lot of, or not necessarily a lot of, but from time to time you get perhaps the jury was kind of colluding and block voting and whatever. Did you get any kind of sense of that? Granted, you were probably only there for like 10, 12 hours, or having to go back to the tribal council again.
Well, I got voted out, and I was very, you know, it did not bum me out at all. I mean, I was, you know, I was like, oh man, I was this close, but I was not. I got so much further in the game than I ever thought I would. So I was very like, well, you know, you win some, you lose some. Like, I was not overly distraught about, you know, coming that close because I had gotten so much further than I ever thought I would. So then, that, you know, I came off and they gave me like an orange soda and I think it's Oreos or something like that. And they said, they said, okay, we're going to go back to where everybody is. And I was like, oh, does everybody hate me? And like, oh, no, it's fine. And so, and they said, we're going to have a toga party tonight. I was like, oh, I've always wanted to go to a toga party. This is phenomenal. So I went back and everybody was very nice. I mean, they were like, you know, a little bit like, ah, like, you know, like the jury gets. And so, but there, I tend to think that, you know, I don't watch a ton of these Ponderosa secret scenes, but I don't think that too many times. Like, it's like once you get voted out, it's like, okay, now how do you like it? Like, you know, I don't think that people are generally bitter to the other jury people.
Yeah, just to the finalists, I imagine.
Right. It's, you know, it's like the opposite of what we were saying before about how if you're, when you're still in the game, you're more willing to forgive people that screwed you over when you're in the game. It's like, and when you're both out of the game, you're also more willing to forgive people. Not always the case. Not always the case.
Sure. So I guess why did you end up voting for Jenna over Matthew?
I just felt like I was with Matthew from day one of the game. And then I was also with Jenna from day 12. So I had a good working knowledge of what both of them were and were not responsible for in the game. And Jenna was much more in the driver's seat in the game than Matthew was. Like, Jenna, there was a period of time, like, Jenna was in control of her fate in the game from day one through day 30, and then not for about 6 days, and then the last 3 days. Matthew was really, you know, didn't really come into his own and knowing what was going on in the game until from like day 30 on. So there was a bigger period of the game where Jenna knew what was going on. And so I felt like Jenna also won 4 immunities. You can't take that away from her. You know, if, you know, push comes to shove, who would I be more likely to give $1 million to? You know, you have a very nice, adventurous, you know, executive who works for a hotel chain, or a 21-year-old model who might have, you know, model-type parties and stuff that I may or may not be invited to.
I like the way you think.
I'm going to, you know, if all other things are equal, I'm gonna vote for the model.
It's like I remember on your own show, the season preview episode for Nicaragua, talking about, well, there may be more value in becoming Jimmy Johnson's best friend than actually winning this game.
Yeah. So, and that, I mean, that's not why I voted for Jenna, but I have never regretted voting for Jenna. And I think that her final tribal council was much more on the nose for what it's supposed to be than what Matthew's was.
You don't share his love of Colin Powell?
I used to joke during that time that who's what do they ask? Who's your role model or what historical
figure? Who inspires you?
Who inspires you? Jenna says, yeah, my mom. Matthew says Colin Powell. And I always say, I wonder if Colin Powell watches Survivor. Says, what? The crazy guy? Says I'm like him?
I think it was who he tried to model his game after, or not necessarily within Survivor, but who he tries to model himself after, maybe. I think Colin Powell is actually not the worst choice if you want to just be kind of seen as fair and even and everything like that. But yeah, it's kind of a what the fuck choice for a final tribal council.
It really was, especially at that time. Like Colin Powell was going to the UN and talking about the weapons that Iraq has, and you know, it's very it's just a very odd choice at that time.
Yeah. So can you talk about your own hierarchy of jury votes, BB? So, given certain combinations of people in the final two, who would you have preferred to vote for?
I guess it would depend on what would be specific combination. You want to fire some combinations at me? I'll tell you who I would vote for.
Okay, I was thinking more sort of general stuff. So, you know, is Dina above Jenna and below somebody else? Or, you know, where does Heidi fall on this? Stuff like that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say because you don't know how they would have gotten there. I mean, in a vacuum, I would have, like, if you asked me on day 24, would I vote for Dina or vote for Jenna, I would say I would vote for Dina, but it's hard to know without getting there. Did Dina win six immunities to get there? Did Jenna, was Dina in a really compromised position throughout the game and was sort of brought there as a goat after she, sort of went off the deep end? So I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. So when we talk about jury votes in your season, one of the big questions is Chrissy's, and, it's nice to have a platform where we can finally kind of settle this matter as far as we can, given that we can't actually talk to Chrissy. Do you think Chrissy intended to vote for Jenna or not?
This is difficult to say, and I don't know exactly when this came up, but I said this, maybe in messing around, talking with everybody after the finale, and I think I famously, where it really picked up steam, I said it on the Howard Stern show, I believe, and when we were doing press, and I think that there is a good question as to whether, they showed Chrissy say, I'm never going to vote for those girls on day 33, yet she votes for Jenna to win the game on day 39, and I didn't know if there was any, and Chrissy had gotten along with Matthew. Chrissy and Matthew were tighter, so it didn't make any sense at the time. Why would Chrissy vote for Matthew? And I said, well, what if Chrissy, because of her hearing, didn't understand because it makes it sound like it's some sort of an intelligence thing, but she wasn't a Survivor fan, and was she too far away from Jeff where she couldn't read his lips and see that the person's name you put in there is to win the game, not be voted out? Because throughout the whole rest of the game, you were voting somebody out. And if you're not a Survivor watcher, I don't know if that's totally intuitive that at the final tribal council, you're voting for somebody to win the game. Now, Chrissy, in the 10 years that this has happened, has denied this. And I kind of feel like, that Chrissy has such a, who gives an F attitude about many things, including Survivor. A part of me says, like, she really did do the wrong thing, she would have at some point said, hey, that whole vote thing, meant to vote for Matthew. But she never has. So, it's hard to say. You kind of have to take her at her word that she said that she meant to vote for Jenna, but there's like some weird things that they've never shown the tape of that.
Yeah,
I think shown the tape of every other season, so that's the only thing that makes me say that is weird.
That's the thing for me too. I'm pretty sure, and maybe I actually heard it from you, but I know I heard somewhere that Amazon only is the season that in all the other seasons on the DVD you can see every juror's vote fully and what they say as they're giving their final tribal council vote. But for Amazon that was not included, and I think it is unique among Survivor seasons to not have that.
I mean, until you get Chrissy on a polygraph and ask her, I don't know if you're ever gonna get the answer, but I mean she says that she meant to vote for Jenna. She swears that was the case. So
do you believe her?
I would have to say that I do. I'm not sure if she swears. But it is odd. It is definitely
something. Yeah, all right. That's fine. I've been wondering about that for a long, long time, as I'm sure.
Well, I wonder about it when, because sometimes I've done the math before of what would have happened if I was up against Jenna in the finals. And I say, I'm pretty sure Jenna would have gotten Heidi's vote, Alex's vote, and Dave's vote. And I'm pretty sure I would have gotten Dina's vote and Matt's vote and Butch's vote. But I'm not sure who would have gotten...
Spin the wheel.
Yeah. And that would have been a far worse way to lose Survivor than what ultimately ended up happening.
Well, my question was going to be, do you think that if she made clear in her voting confessional at final that she was trying to vote for Matthew, but because the vote didn't make a difference in terms of the end result, they didn't stop her? Do you think if it had made a difference, they would have stopped her and said, well, hold on a minute?
It's funny because at that last tribal council, there's not a camera person there. So now maybe they, I don't know if they have like a booth or whatever, but it's supposed to be
someone watching you.
So yeah, I guess so. I guess they have a monitor or whatever. So I don't know, but you would think that they would have, if that was the case, you would think they would have stopped her at the time and say, you know, taking her Christy aside and say, hey Christy, you know that. Could we get that again? There was a problem with the camera. And by the way, you want to vote for the person who is winning the game. I mean, they said at the time, like, there was no, it was just a single camera and that they're for secrecy and whatever, that they make it so, nobody was seeing that. I don't know if they were fibbing about that. So,
yeah, well, interesting stuff.
I guess somebody has to check the gate and make sure they got it, make sure the camera was rolling.
Yeah. Okay, so Rob, now I think now that we're done kind of talking about your season, we do have some more general questions. And the first thing I actually want to ask you about that I can't believe hasn't come up yet too much is Jeff Probst. What did you think about Jeff Probst when you were out there playing?
I mean, I was super excited to meet Jeff Probst. I was such a big Survivor fan. You know, I had never really met anybody famous before at that period in my life. And so it was just a real thrill. In college, I wrote a thesis paper about the impact that Survivor and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire had had. So I was very much a fanboy. I was very excited to meet Jeff Probst in casting, let alone on Survivor. And, you know, what Jeff Probst, I feel like, you know, in my head, I think a lot of Survivors think like, oh, Jeff Probst doesn't like me. I don't think that that's the case. And I think especially in the Amazon, I think that Jeff Probst, for the most part, was amused by my antics. And he said, you know, a lot of flattering things at the time. So I think that he enjoyed having me and what I brought onto the show. And like my favorite thing that he had said about me while we were out there was like it was day 15 or so, and we were getting ready for a reward challenge, and we were sort of like hanging out with Jeff for a couple minutes, and I was talking about what was going to happen next, or like, see, in Survivor or whatever, they did it this way, and so today's day 15, and Jeff Probst said that I'm like Jamie Kennedy's character in Scream, the guy who knows all the rules about the horror movie. And, you know, is like, see, oh, she's not gonna die because she's the virgin or whatever. And like, is ultimately has studied the horror movies and knows how to survive the horror movie because from watching all of them. And that's what Jeff Probst said that I was basically like.
Yeah, you're like Jesse Eisenberg in Zombieland.
Yeah.
Although he probably didn't say that at the time.
It would have been very prophetic.
So actually, you know, before we move totally on from Amazon, we were wondering, and it's cool if not, but if there were any good stories, we'd like to hear about those that we didn't get to see on camera or anything. If you don't, it's all good if not.
Yeah, I don't have one off the top of my head.
Yeah, we've done a ton on Amazon, by the way. Thank you for going in that much detail on it.
Yeah.
No problem.
I was going to say, I think we exhausted pretty much everything we want to talk about Amazon. Do you want to go into All Stars quickly? Because obviously there's been nice to talk about that.
I don't know if I have much to contribute there, but I'm happy to tell you about what I was thinking throughout the whole process.
Yeah, well, I think the most interesting thing there is the pregame, where obviously in an All-Star season, there is a certain metagame where people know each other before the game. They have this kind of understanding that they're going to work together. So how did that come into play in All-Stars and how that affects what happened to you?
Well, I first found out about Survivor All-Stars. Survivor, the Amazon, finished airing on May 11th or whatever. And so what they do in the of 2003, and so what they do is CBS has that the week after the Survivor finale. It's called the Upfronts, and I don't know if all your listeners know what that is, but it's basically all the networks get together, and they each have a day, and they preview what's coming up on the next TV season to get advertisers to be excited and make purchase orders for the upcoming season of TV. So they tend to bring the survivors out on stage in front of, you know, I think it was like at Carnegie Hall or something like that. And they bring the survivors out on the stage, and they do like a whole big show. And they had like Kevin James was doing like 5 minutes of comedy or whatever. And so they brought us out on. They were going to bring the final six, out onto the stage to talk about it. Like, and here are the people from The Last Survivor. But they also had that day Richard Hatch, Rudy, Ethan, Jerry Manthe, Sue Hawk, and I don't remember if there was a did I say Hatch, Rudy, Sue, Jerry, Ethan, and I don't remember. Maybe somebody else. Maybe I don't recall. But they were all there. And we were like, "What are you guys doing here?" And they're like, "What? You didn't hear about the Survivor All Stars?" Like, "What? Survivor All Stars?" And then that night, we were having a they had like a big party and everything. And so we were hanging out at the party, and I was hanging out at the table that Mark Burnett was at. And somebody had asked, Mark Burnett of, is Rob going to be on the next, is going to be on that All-Stars? And Mark Burnett had said, is the Pope Polish? So I felt very good. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go play Survivor All-Stars now. So, this was only like 4 days after Survivor the Amazon had ended. So I said, well, I'm not going to go back to my job. Like, I took a leave of absence anyway for a couple days after the finale. So I was like, I'm not going to go back to my job. I'm going to just do everything in my power to get ready for Survivor All-Stars, which was going to tape in October. And it wasn't like a formality yet that I was going to be on the show, but I felt very good. As, Jeff had said, he's the smartest player to never win the game. So I felt very good about my chances to go and be on Survivor the All-Stars. And Richard Hatch is saying to me, oh, we should work together. We should make an alliance. I was like, oh, this is great. And I said, I'm gonna make friends with all the survivors. And I was going to, the charity events, and I was talking with Jerry, and then I hung out with Colby that summer. And then, at the Survivor the Amazon finale, I ran into, Boston Rob for the first time. And, I was so excited to meet Boston Rob, whereas Boston Rob was not a influencer of my game per se at all in the Amazon. He was an influencer of mine in the way that he talked to the camera. And before Boston Rob, I don't think anybody really ever talked to the camera and almost talked to the people at home like Boston Rob did. And while I didn't say the same sort of things that he said, he talked about, I'd rather be feared than I said, I love the way he talks to the camera. So, but for whatever reason that Boston Rob at least that night, and he had had a few drinks that night, he said like, you ripped off my game. And I was like, no, I'm
I made it past the jury phase.
No. But then we became friendly. And, we had hung out a few times, in between, over that summer. And I didn't think that he was a real shoo-in for Survivor All-Stars. He wasn't high on my list of people that I thought were going to be there. I thought he was in the mix, but I thought he was very much on the bubble. So we had hung out a few times, that we had gone to, Foxwoods together one a couple of weeks later, like we met there. We had hung out in New York, we had hung out at some charity events and stuff. And then I had actually gone to Boston Rob's house on Labor Day weekend. He was having a big party and he invited a lot of survivors there. And so I stayed at Boston Rob's house for two nights. Like, this is like, 6 weeks before Survivor All-Stars. And Alicia was there also. Ultimately when I get to, when I see my tribe in the hotel room for the first time, I did not know that this was my tribe. I am very happy about this group because I am friends with everybody here. I'm friends with Big Tom. I feel like I'm good friends with Amber. I'm friends with Boston Rob. I'm friends with Alicia, who I drove her home from Boston Rob's house. Sue Hawk is here, who I'm very excited to meet. And I traveled with these guys all the way from Miami, and we were together like commingling for like 5 days before the game even started. And I felt like, well, there's no way this is going to be our tribe because we've been together for so long. But sure enough, it was. But I felt very good about this group because I knew everybody going in.
Yeah, sure. What was the relationship like between Boston Rob and Amber going into the game? Because I've heard conflicting reports.
Well, it was very flirty. I think they definitely were phone friends beforehand. I don't think that they were dating before the game, but they were definitely, you know, they had a very close mutual friend in Mitchell Olsen. And Mitchell and Amber were sort of like best friends. And also Boston Rob and Mitchell were very close. So they sort of had this mutual friend in Mitchell Olsen. And it's Boston Rob and Mitchell was sort of a funny pair. But
anyone's a funny pair.
Yeah, but they were very close. But Boston, I mean, so they were definitely familiar, but they were very flirtatious before the game started. And from day one, that's why you see them on day one. I'm like, I couldn't believe that this was going on. It's like, oh my God. Just like with Dave and Heidi, like in the Amazon, how it was supposed to be, Dave and Heidi are a pair. Dave and Heidi get split up, but somehow on Survivor All-Stars, Rob and Amber are a pair. Nobody really seemed to have an issue with this.
Yeah, so what do you think went into the dynamic between you and Boston Rob when you were out there playing Survivor All-Stars?
Well, it's sort of a funny thing because up until the night that I get voted out, I thought me and Boston Rob have a pretty good relationship. I mean, you know, just in talking about the Amazon over again, I feel like it's the same sort of relationship as I have with Roger, where, he's the clear leader of the group and I'm one of the wingmen. I'm there with Big Tom and it's like, hey, whatever you want to do, however you want to vote. You've got my vote. I'm 100% loyal. I'm with you and we're friends, you know? And I'm not plotting to get Boston Rob out of the game. Now, ultimately, much like Roger, if I stick around, and now I'm on another tribe or it's after the merge, you know, all bets are off. But in the first part of the game, I'm saying, hey, I'm with you.
Yeah, I think from his end, he's saying, well, here's this guy who I know is a hell of a player, and here are five or four other people who will just listen and do whatever I say, so see you later, other Rob.
I mean, that's ultimately what ended up happening, and I was a little naive to that. The conversation that they end up showing in the game or in the show where me and Boston Rob, like, shake hands on the beach.
Yeah.
They show that that happened way earlier. Like, that probably happened on day six or seven. But they play it like it happened like 10 minutes before the tribal council. But Boston Rob said to me, I know you know how to play this game. I think we should work together. He had talked about the final two. And I said, let's not even get carried away. Let's just, you know, cause I feel like let's not, you know, overpromise things on the, so I don't know what ultimately why they ultimately ended up, going with me over, but I think it's like what you said. It's like Sue Hawk was so grating on people. I liked Sue Hawk, but she's, fought with Boston Rob. She fought with Big Tom, night and day. Alicia fought with Big Tom. You know, where I also did a bad job on Survivor All-Stars, like, I think, like, there was a little bit of, like, tension forming between, me and Alicia, and I think I was getting on Amber's nerves a little bit, and I think Amber was kind of pushing for me to go also. I think that was, like, I think Boston Rob was he could have probably been talked into any of the three. I think Amber pushed for me to go, though, because she's, you see her in the episode talking to Big Tom. Like, my boot episode on the All-Stars is very odd. Like, they don't really, like, talk about why I should go. Like, I felt like a little bit like I got a bit of a hatchet job edit on the All-Stars in that I felt like the editors of the All-Stars made it like I got voted out because I was lazy and not a hard worker around the camp. When they do the Home Depot challenge, I was like, there's Boston Rob says at one point, where's Sesternino? Is he on a coffee break? And that really hurt me at the time because I was not being lazy. I was like carrying something that I had found on the other side of the island and I found like a big pallet of wood, and I like was lugging it across the island. I should have not had anything to do with, like, had I sat out that Home Depot challenge, that would have been a better move for me, because there was not enough, like, Big Tom and Boston Rob were doing, like, hammering stuff or whatever. There was really nothing for me to do other than just gather things. So I was looking for more and more things I could gather, and I ended up going too far away. And so, Rob says I was on a coffee break, and then people, oh, see, he's on a break. He's lazy. But I was one thing about me, I am a hard worker. I work hard around the camp because I want, especially when there are other people around who work hard, like Big Tom, and Sue Hawk. And those are people that work hard around the camp. If you ask Big Tom, he would tell you, I was getting the wood. I was getting, whatever. If I'm with people who are lazy and don't work hard around the camp, I will be lazy and not work hard around the camp because I'm trying to fit in with everybody. But, so I felt like they did not depict it on the show as though I was voted out because I was some sort of a threat. I felt like I was voted out because, I was some sort of I was lazy, and I tried to find the key for the treasure chest of rice. I'm like, who cares if I woke up early one morning and said, I'm going to go look for the key and try to help out the tribe so everybody likes me more. I don't see that could be construed as lazy, but, I should have, knowing what I know about Boston Rob now, the fact that I was trying to be a hero and look for the key instead of, supporting Rob in his efforts to find the key. I can see why that would, rub him the wrong way.
Do you think that these friendships that Boston Rob was forming before the game were genuine, or was he playing the game, 3 months before officially it even started?
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I just think that, for Rob, I don't think that they meant what they did. And don't get me wrong, I would have had no problem screwing over Boston Rob in the game. I had no issue with that. I mean, that's what the game. I know Lex was very, more hurt by all of that. That we had a bond and whatever. So I don't know if he was calculating from the get-go, but he was enough of an opportunist that said, this $1 million or winning this game means more to me than this friendship with this person who was also on the same game show I was on. So I've never faulted Rob for doing what he had to do in Survivor, the All-Stars. I mean, where I was hurt by all of that was then I felt like after the game was over, I felt like Rob never really was interested in rekindling the friend. Like, I felt like Rob could have said to me after the game, like, hey, man, I'm sorry about all that. Like, I always did, I felt like there could have been something conciliatory that was said after the fact Alex from my season, after I got voted out, after I voted him out on the on Star of the Amazon, like, he was cool with the jury, but I saw him one night after the All-Stars, and he was really, I felt like he was really kind of a jerk about like, oh man, when you lost on the All-Stars, that was so great. I was loving it. Like I was really, I felt like I'm never going to be that way. To and be bitter about anything to any other person, whoever wronged me on Survivor. But I did feel like after it was all over, like when we get to the finale in May, like Rob could have been more like hey, you were a really good player, that's why I had to get you out. It wasn't you were annoying or lazy or not pulling your weight. But I mean, that was how I felt at the time. A lot of time has gone by. I mean, I think that I have a pretty decent relationship with Rob at this point. Like, we're not, like, you know, best buds or anything like that, but, you know, we've had a beer or two, you know, since then, but it's, you know, it's not a, the Survivor of the All-Stars has not really come up too often.
Do you think Boston Rob anticipated the kind of bitterness or whatever you want to call it on the part of people like Lex? But we saw Lex famously tell Ethan that, you know, I'm friends with you, but I have to act as if it's all business. And obviously maybe ended up not actually believing that himself. Do you think Rob thought that he would be able to maintain this kind of friendship after the game, no matter what he did within the game?
I don't know if it's guilt or if it's just that he's just not that interested. I think that if, you know, I mean, I don't know what kind of an effort Rob made. I'm not privy to the conversations that Rob and Lex have had over the years. So I don't know if how much of an effort Rob has made to try to patch those wounds up, or if maybe Rob isn't really that interested in patching those wounds up. I think that he has at least made a half-hearted effort to Lex and said, hey, you know, I'm sorry about all, you know, all that or whatever. And, you know, but I don't know if he's ever gone, you know, it's hard for me to say. I know with me, like, I don't feel like Rob ever, you know, bent over backwards to, you know, say like, hey man, like, all that stuff back there, you know, that was all in the game and whatever. But, I don't think he owes that to me either. Like, I think it would be nice. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I think that people, you know, every survivor is different. I hope I'm not, sounding like, too much of a baby about any of this. I'm just trying to, you know, that's kind of how it went down.
All right. We do have a more recent example, which maybe isn't a perfect analog because it was based on a friendship formed within the game. But when Rob, maybe blindsided, if you want to call it that, Grant in Redemption Island, it seemed like he generally thought that Grant would be able to get over it and, you know, still be close with him after the game, when, from what I've heard at least, you know, they're not really on speaking terms at all.
Yeah, and again, I don't know how much Rob is interested in, you know, trying to make Grant feel better. I mean, I think he's a little bit of like a, you know, I think he sort of goes into the game with sort of like the mercenary attitude, and, you know, good or bad, it's sort of like, you know, you know, an athlete, the way that they would enter a competition, that, you know, these are what the rules of the game are. I don't care how I get there. I'm really concerned with the results, and I'm here to provide for, you know, my family and, you know, and take care of the people that are my real friends and my real, relationships. So if a guy who I just met on a game show, or somebody who just happened to be on the same game show as me, you know, gets upset with me, well, so be it. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, having that attitude. I mean, that's just, you know, one of the things that makes this kind of an interesting and cool game.
Sure. One last question about Survivor, and then we'll move on to some more general stuff. What do you make of Jenna and Amber as the winner of your respective seasons?
Well, I give more credit to Jenna than I do to Amber. I mean, I don't want to say that Amber contributed nothing to the game, because she would not be high on, if I was going to rank the list of 23 different winners, or I don't know if I had to put Sandra twice. I mean, she would probably be in my bottom five, Amber. But I don't think she contributed nothing. Like I said earlier, I think that Rob may have been more on the fence, and Amber, you know, probably pushed harder than Rob did to say, hey, we should vote out Rob. I think one of the things there also was that the familiarity between Amber and Alicia, like, I think that really did not help that I had two people from Survivor Australia on my team, whereas if, you know, that was some random person, Alicia, then Amber. I mean, I know they were on different tribes, but the people from Survivor Australia all knew each other very well. So the devil, you know, is much more likely to get kept in a situation like that than the devil you don't. So I think I was sort of drawing dead trying to get people to vote for Alicia when we went to tribal council that time. But so Amber, I think, did contribute. I think she did a good job of being a sounding board for Rob during the game. But if I had a vote, I would have voted for Rob. Whereas I had a vote in the Amazon and I voted for Jenna.
Sure. Yeah, I think that makes sense. And, you know, now I think we've got to want to move on to some stuff that you've done post-Survivor, which there's, you know, we'll get to the podcast very shortly. But you mentioned ranking the winners. I've always been curious, specifically someone like you who, and I'm not trying to suck kneecaps here or anything, but I think you're very aware, you're widely regarded as one of the elite players of all time. How do you go about kind of ranking yourself in there? Not necessarily where do you rank yourself, but how do you, as someone who's actually been out there playing, when you're one of the people you're ranking, how do you do that?
It's hard for me to really get a sense of, like, I leave that to the, you know, the fans and the viewers to rank where people are. I mean, I think that there's a little bit of a line of demarcation with, like, there's the truly, you know, elite, you know, upper, you know, penthouse where, you know, Boston Rob and I think Parvati and Sandra hang out. And, you know, you can debate whether or not Richard Hatch is on the list to get up there. And then there's, like, you know, another tier below that of where I think, you know, you want to put, you know, Yule and your Tom Westman and the people like that. And I think I'm in, you know, in hanging out. I say Suri is probably the closest to the closest person that's been to playing the game that I play. Now, she did it a whole nother time than I did. She basically did it twice where I did it once. But I think that, you know, we're, you know, in that sort of neighborhood is probably where I see myself in the, you know, in where I'd put my my game. But it's very subjective.
Yeah, okay. That's very cool. I've always wondered that. Now, another thing that you are up to now, of course, is doing your own podcast. Rob has a podcast. But, you know, having played Survivor yourself and now being in this position where you're basically the voice of reality TV on the internet, what's that like? I'm sure having played is helpful, but does that kind of hinder the process at all?
No, I think I have a little bit of a unique perspective to talk about Survivor and reality TV. And I love the medium of podcast and, you know, digital content creation and just the idea of, you know, self-publishing. I can, you know, create content here in my office and then be interactive with people around the world around that content. And what's really fun about reality TV, specifically in that medium, is that, you know, back in 2000, Survivor would come on and then you had people in your office and you stood around the water cooler like, hey, that's Jervis, right? And so they're like, hey, Colleen's hot, right? And so, but you know, a lot of people were.
Sorry, Colleen's down there.
The world's a little different and maybe not everybody works in an office or maybe, you know, there were 30 million people watching Survivor back then. Now you might not work with anybody who watches Survivor anymore or doesn't watch it the day that it's on. Maybe they watch it on the weekend. So what's cool about, you know, what we do and the kind of stuff that, you know, you guys do too is, you know, it's a place where people from all over the world can, you know, join in on this, you know, conversation and talk about what's going to happen next.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's very, very cool. And now another thing that you've been doing is kind of expanding on your product a bunch. You want to talk about that a bit? Because I'm sure, you know, 90% of our listeners at least listen to you as well.
are you talking about all the shows that?
Yeah,
all,
you know, you got bloggers coming in. The new fantasy show, which by the way, I'm going to be tuning into weekly because I could use some help.
Yeah. What I like to do is I don't want to just only be confined to talking about Survivor. I mean, it's a big part of what we do, but I kind of, you know, see Rob has a website, you know, as sort of like a kind of a Huffington Post of reality where, you know, we're going to talk about Big Brother. We're going to talk about The Amazing Race. We're talking about things like The Bachelor right now. We're talking about pop culture. We have, you know, bloggers writing articles about the different shows. And it's basically just become more so than just the site where we're talking about what happened on Survivor, where you can only come and talk for, you know, 26 weeks out of the year because Survivor's not on the other half of the year. So we're just trying to, you know, come up with all sorts of different ways to, you know, keep the conversation going. And we're talking about movies this summer, and we're having all sorts of different reality star guests come on with us. So it's a lot of fun. You mentioned I'm doing a fantasy football show also, which is called Fantasy Football Schmucks, which is just getting off the ground right now as we speak.
Yeah, well, I tuned in earlier today, and it was very. I thought it was a very well oiled machine. I thought your friends were very funny, and
it looks like it carried away.
Great pod, as they say. And actually, you know what? Speaking of football, a little bit. Dom and I used to like to close out the shows during last season's NFL season with, you know, the final few minutes being, of course, Tebow time, and now he is on your beloved Jets. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think Tim Tebow is a very interesting and polarizing figure for a lot of reasons. One being his specific skill set of, you know, is he a good quarterback or not? And then you also have the whole religious aspect and the celebrity aspect of Tim Tebow. So I think no football player really embodies the reality TV experience like Tim Tebow, other than, of course, the immortal Gary Hogaboom.
Of course. So I think, you know, normally you're on the other side of the microphone during these podcasts, but while you're the interviewee, is there anything else you want to add?
I mean, nothing that's jumping out. I hope I didn't, you know, talk your ear off too much about any of this Survivor stuff. Or
not at all. I assure you, we'll do another 2 hours if you want to go.
Yeah, well, I think we've covered about everything you want to talk about. So thank you for being with us for this long. We're approaching 3 hours mark now and covering everything in such great detail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd ask if you want to plug anything or tell people where they can find you, but I think they pretty much know that already.
Well, I'll never miss an opportunity to, you know, take advantage of your hospitality. So what I would like to say is, I'm not sure when this is going up, but you know, something that we're really excited about on Rob Has a Website is the return of Big Brother this summer. And you know what that means?
Yes.
It's time to scope out the live feeds. And starting on Monday the 18th, there is going to be a special sale of early bird discount for the Big Brother live feeds. And
that sounds good.
So what you could do is go to robhasawebsite.com/livefeeds starting next week, and you can get the Big Brother live feeds just for $29.99 for the summer. And for the first time, you can watch the Big Brother live feeds on mobile device for free. So it's very exciting. And if you go through Rob Has a Website to get the Big Brother live feeds, I am going to I'm offering a free gift. Of either you get the choice of an autographed commemorative Robin Nicole photo or the Big Brother live feed bingo card. So if you go through Rob as a website, we'll send us your confirmation on forward us the email to robhasanemail.com, robhasanemail@gmail.com, and then we'll send you out something in the mail.
Can we expect to hear the return of the Rachel laugh to the Rob Has a Podcast soundboard?
Oh, wait, hold on. If you give me a second, let me cue it up.
Oh, man.
I've never had such an anticipated Rachel laugh. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I also have...
The game is afoot.
Yes!
This is a...
No, I'm going to have to say it was poop.
That's Jonas.
Yeah.
Here, do you know this one?
I have nothing left to set.
No, what is that?
That's a purple.
That's Purple Kelly.
Purple Kelly, yes.
Oh my God, I did know that. I feel so embarrassed now.
Yeah, I think on that note, we'll wrap it up. So for those of you who have listened this long, thank you. As you said in the introduction, we're going to be bringing you content of various kinds over the summer before Survivor starts again in September. In particular, we're going to be doing what we did today with Stephen Fishback, hopefully, sometime before the end of this month, so look out for that. I think that's about it. So from Colin and myself and Rob.
Can I give a shout out?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I give a shout out to both Gary Wise and Kaz Kozdrowski, who
good friends of ours.
Yes. That's why I'm saying for quite some time they have been saying that you have to do a podcast with Dom and Colin.
Well, we hope you enjoyed it as much as we have. Yeah. We had a great time talking to you.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, and always enjoy talking about Survivor. And if you guys ever want to talk about we talked about all of the ghosts of Survivor past. If you ever want to talk about the ghosts of Survivor present, let me know.
Absolutely. Hey, welcome back anytime.
All right, guys.